The November 23rd, 2015 regular meeting will now come to order. Mr. Ellis, will you lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance?
The Pledge of Allegiance?
To the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. All right, Mrs. Moak, roll call.
Mr. Buchholz?
Here.
Mr. Elger?
Here.
Mr. Ellis?
Here.
Mr. Bochinski?
Here.
Mrs. Clark?
Here.
Mr. Esplande?
Here.
Mrs. Elger?
Here. All right, recognition.
So on November 15th, it was Board Member Recognition Day, so I'd like to start by, yes, I know you probably missed that. It's probably not a holiday. A Hallmark card yet, but it is, soon will be, I'm sure. But I'd like to...
Yeah, right. Appropriately.
It's pretty exciting. Want to thank our board for their service and their commitment. So people realize how much commitment each and every one of you give to this community, to our students, our staff, our parents, and the overall community. So we have a proclamation or a resolution, because you can't have one of these days without one of these. So whereas the school board members are elected to sit in trust for their diverse communities, in that capacity are charged with meeting the community's expectations and aspirations for the public education of their children, and whereas school board members are entrusted with the guardianship and wise expenditure of tax dollars, and they are responsible for maintaining and preserving the buildings, grounds, and other areas of the school district that the community has put in their trust, and whereas school board members are responsible for providing leadership that ensures a clear, shared vision of public education for their schools that sets high standards for education of all students and requires the effective and efficient operations of their districts, and whereas school board members adopt public policy to give voice to that leadership and employ a superintendent to administer board policy and are also responsible for the regular monitoring of the district's performance in compliance with state policy, and whereas school board members selflessly donate countless hours to the public service with no compensation, and whereas employers are supportive of their employees who serve as school board members, generously lending support and time, employers give their employees the opportunities to better serve the needs of the school district, community, citizens they represent through sometimes tremendous sacrifice to their employer, and whereas decisions made by school board members directly impact the quality of life in their communities, place them at the front line of the American democracy. Therefore, be it resolved by the Glen Ellyn School District 41 that we recognize School Board Member Day as a way to honor those citizens who devote their time and energy for the education of our children. Again, thank you for everything you guys, each and every one of you, do. I appreciate it. Yes, that's really the
children.
So I just jump right into superintendent reports. Board communication follow-up. At the last board meeting, members asked what other districts were doing in regards to reviewing Board of Education emails. Nancy and Erica contacted local districts, and each district contacted has a district staff member review the emails. In some districts, administrators actually even respond to the board, for the board. Others collect the questions and then disperse out all the questions to all administrators. But what was consistent was administrators being at the board recording secretary or other district administrators were reviewing that piece. So I know that was asked of us. And our practices are very similar. So that's what I brought back. So further conversation on that?
I just go back to something. I know that I think part of that was that we would spell it out a little bit clearer for people that they're doing that.
Oh,
which is right.
We did that. Sorry.
But the my concern with that is I think that almost even hinders. And I'm glad. I mean, if we're going to do it, I'm glad that we do it that way. But I believe that it's going to hinder even further people wanting to communicate directly with a board member. As I said last time, I think an email to an individual board member, not to the entire group, something personal between, you know, between a resident and that board member, and that board member may not feel as free to go ahead and send it if somebody else is viewing that, especially if it's regarding maybe someone on staff or whatever. So, you know, again, I'm in one of these scenarios where I don't care what other school districts do. I just don't think it's the right thing to do. So I think that we should be eliminating that portion of it, but that's just my opinion.
Okay. Others?
I think you answered the question. Right. I mean, I've reached out, I think I said this last time, to District 200 a couple of times for information, and you get a response back, and it is from the administrator. And then it was one case where I wanted to see if a board member could contact me, so I responded again, and then a board member got in touch with me at that point. But it is, for them, that single point of contact is the administrator's answering the questions first. I think what this discussion actually raised for me is that we really, as a board, have a very open response in terms of individual board members reaching out to community members or anybody that writes. You know, there's no funneling through the superintendent or me. You know, as current board president, we've never had that with our board presidents in the past. So I think actually it's we're probably a little bit more open than some other districts, and that's I think that's a good thing, so that people can respond. So thanks.
You're comfortable with current practice?
Yes, absolutely. And also, we found out this is heading out to board reports, but any of us that sat in on any of the conference this weekend, it seemed like every conversation was around the fact that there's no communication between board members, staff members, et cetera, that isn't available for the public to FOIA. I mean, everything is FOIA-able. So there's that reality.
Others?
I'm on board with the way it is right now.
Current practice?
Mm-hmm.
Joe? Current practice? Current practice? Stephanie? Okay. Patrick?
Good.
Okay. We'll continue with the current practice. We did put on there that statement and made it much larger. Second piece for me, the annual statement of affairs notice. This is in accordance with section 10-17 of the school code. This is just that the district is giving notice to all of its stakeholders that the annual statement of affairs will be posted. The statements include capital assets, liabilities, number of students per grade level, statement of revenues, gross payment of certified, non-certified personnel, and payments of over $2,500 and contracts over $25,000. So that is just being posted. It's not an approved thing. It's just a notice to our stakeholders. Any questions on that? Oh, thank you. Thank you. The blue... The original one that was in the board packet, we had some of the personnel in the wrong categories. Becky corrected that this afternoon, and we got it out on blue. Thank you, Stephanie. I appreciate that. And that the blue one will be the one that's posted.
It is already posted.
It is already posted.
We just wanted to make sure that you saw it before it was in the blue.
Okay, with that, that is my...
That's all of it.
That was it.
Were you going to get an update on specialization, how we were moving forward with that? I didn't know. Maybe that's going to be in the superintendent's report at another meeting.
Yeah, I'll make sure teacher specialization. I'll have it on the December 14th.
Okay, thanks, Paul. All right.
And just clarifying on the next steps with
the odd number.
The odd number. Yeah, that's what I thought you were. Thank you.
Okay, yeah, you're welcome. Public participation. I'd like to remind members of the audience that speakers should identify themselves, complete a public participation form that you can get when you walk in the door. Limit your comments to 3 minutes or less. If your comments have substantially been reflected in others, we would ask in the interest of time that you please forego making them and you provide the board with any copies of written material that you may have. I always say we would like that as well, regardless of whether you speak or not, to have that written copy. personal complaints and criticism about staff members, students, or other members of the District 41 community should be initiated privately with the appropriate district representative. Profanity, interruption, and or other interference with the orderly conduct of the meeting are not permitted. All questions raised will be forwarded to the appropriate D41 staff representative for response as a response is warranted, as we have been doing. Is there anyone present that would like to address the board at this time?
Jeff Cooper?
Mr. Cooper? Jeff is going to stay standing. He's got some back stuff, so I asked him if he would just stand to pick up the mic. Thank you.
All right, Jeff Cooper, Glenella. I'll speak loud enough so you guys can all hear me.
Thank you.
Well, I appreciate the fact that we were having a TRS discussion. I don't appreciate the Texas two-stepping by a number of board members, especially Mr. Buczynski. Why should we be doing the TRS rather than hemming on the back and forth? And once in a while, you guys can actually look up and do what I'm trying to do here. Defendize. We should be doing it because you're supposed to be representing the taxpayers, the stakeholders of this district. I know you didn't get vetted out 2 years ago because you guys ran against no one, but that's what you're supposed to be doing, is representing us. And that rambling that I just heard you do, where you never, never had the guts to make a point. You just kept asking questions and just trying to string things along. You never, ever stated anything position-wise. Board members are supposed to do that from time to time. Say something. You said a lot of things, but you didn't say anything. You didn't take a position. It'd be kind of nice. And that's who you're supposed to be representing, is us. And I've got, so I can state this clearly, I have nothing against the 16 people. Nothing. I have the fundamental problem with TRS being paid by the taxpayers for any employees of the district. It could be 16 other people. I have the same issue. We shouldn't be paying them, and we shouldn't be starting discussions about how we can change other facets of the basket, as we're calling it here. One's got nothing to do with the other. Take a vote. Be an adult. Take a vote. Stand up here and say yes or no. That's all I'm asking for. If you say no, well, we didn't get it. I appreciate the conversation. We'll get it somewhere else down the road. Thank you.
Thank you. Mrs. Milk?
Bruce Curry.
Welcome.
In the Finance Committee, we just had a discussion of student fees, and I think it would be great to eliminate the student fees. It is, I don't know, 230, 40, 50 grand, and that comes out to only one half of 1% of the total budget. And I think we do have about $16 million in reserves. I know writing that $75 check for my daughter every year and with my son before that, it's just kind of a pain. I don't know why it's in there. I don't know why we can't cover it in the regular budget. I'd like to also talk about, I know from the discussions on Think Tank that not all the chief teachers' voices were listened to at that point. It was not with Dr. Gordon, it was with Ms. Reebok, or Dr. Reebok. Many teachers were against the implementation and were bullied. Their voices were not heard, welcomed, or tolerated. If a teacher has a dissenting point of view, they really need to be listened to. You may not agree with them or go with that, but I don't feel during the think tank process that they were listened to. And I believe the climate of trust between many of these teachers and their administrators was definitely damaged. Recently, the teachers and staff just filled out the Human X survey.
1 minute.
And I was wondering how the environment of trust was reported back to us and when we were going to get the results of that survey, and when the board might discuss this. Also, I've noticed, just as board members, that's my point on UNX, but as board members, I think you guys had a discussion a while ago about interrupting, and I have noticed just recently that, Mr. Buczynski, you do seem to interrupt quite a bit, and I'd just like you respectfully to listen to that voice, because I think it, I know you guys are discussing, so there is going to be some interruption, but I'd like to see more courtesy. Thank you.
Thank you.
Just a brief piece. On December 14th, there'll be a presentation from HumanX on HumanX, Culture and Climate Survey.
Are we going to, as the board, are we going to get advanced notification of the results?
We can look into that, yeah. Is that something the
there'll be a board report?
There'll be a board report along with it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, is that what you mean, Kurt?
Do you want the
board report ahead of time?
Yeah.
You want to, all the
we normally do.
Yeah, I mean,
Kurt,
what
are you looking for?
Well, no, and in fairness to Paul, we had a little conversation about this today, and I told him this was just one board member's opinion, so I wasn't speaking for the entire board. So, but these kinds of things, you know, it was reported to the staff. I think that we should be getting this ahead of time or at the same time that the staff is getting them, so that we're aware of it. And I articulated stuff and articulated some of the points to Paul as well. I just think we should be getting them more than 6 weeks after we, or 5 weeks after after the districts receive the results. So that's just, again, my opinion on some of the information that we should be receiving as a board. So.
Okay.
Thank you. But there will be a board report.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
All right.
All right. Any more?
Yeah. Nancy?
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Jennifer Rapp.
Good evening.
Hi. Just to piggyback off of what Mr. Curry said about the student fees, they are kind of steep. And then when you add that in with the supply list, seems a little bit outrageous to me. Between my two kids, between the fees and just the supplies and that activity fees, it's a good $500. And a lot of the supplies come back. I've asked my children's teacher and principal about that. For example, when my daughter was in third grade, 200 pencils were on the supply list, and 100 came back in June, and 10 folders, 8 come back. So I don't mind sending supplies with my kids, and I know it sounds petty, but maybe that's an area that we can look at.
Mm-hmm.
I would also like to thank you for getting on the school improvement plan. I noticed that there's a presentation on there tonight, and I have been asking about that, so I appreciate the response. In looking through it, and I'll wait till after the presentation, I'm hoping that some things are going to be more specific. I'm looking for more concrete data. For example, like on page 14, it says, all teachers will be guided by documents that align standards, curriculum, instruction, and assessment. Sounds great. I just would like to look at that document, too, or know what the name of it is. So there's examples of like that throughout the presentation, but I'm excited to see it. Finally, I noticed tonight on the capital projects, there's going to be playground additions at Franklin to make it ADA compliant. I'm assuming that might be some type of swing. And I noticed at Churchill, you're also replacing the equipment. I understand with playground swings, there's a lot of liability there. But I really think you need to weigh the pros and cons. There is liability there. But having swings on a playground for kids outside, we talk about all the time about having 21st century furniture where kids can rock and bounce. I think swings outside on the playground are developmentally appropriate for lesson kids, even if they're not on the special education track. Some kids just need that outside. So I would appreciate it if the board would consider installing swings on all of our elementary schools. Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Smoke?
Okay.
Thank you very much. Thank you, everyone. All right. Presentations, reports, and initiatives.
Would you mind if we just make a slight adjustment and put Jack first?
Oh,
sure. I'm not sure if Jack's that excited to
hear
our...
Saturday, he said he was waiting.
Is that what he said? He could not wait. So... I know, but I just looked at that, and I apologize for doing that. So if the board's okay, and if Jack, are you okay with a quick adjustment?
I'm at the board's pleasure.
What a great answer. So Dave and Jack, do you want to give us a brief update on where we're at? And come on up. Come on up.
Thank you.
Sorry to throw that curveball at you.
Thank you. Actually, Churchill is going along pretty well. We are about a day and a half or so within completely finishing the roof. We just have some additional tarring and some gravel to put up there. The building was tight and dry, so that's...
So the snow didn't...
So the snow, didn't get in. So once it melts off this week, we'll continue on that. All the exterior brick's been installed. We're working on interior wiring, plumbing, mechanical work. And things are moving along quite well. So windows will be going in probably late next week already, so frames and windows. So we'll have the outside pretty well buttoned up.
And then also, we were asked to provide an update on where we stand with regard to the financial status of the project, because we're essentially, other than final closeout of contracts, which means that at the end of the job, they have to all the contractors have to provide closeout documents, as-bills, warranties, O&M manuals, and that information takes a while to compile. So we always hold a little bit of money until that's completely done. So we started delivering some of those documents. We're very close to the end of closing out Franklin, Lincoln, and Forest Glen. Churchill Elementary, the first phase, the first quarter, will take a little bit longer to close out because there's some overlap between that and the next phase of Churchill. But all that being said, we've got a very strong handle on where we stand financially. Out of the $13.7 million of original project cost, we're recommending indicating that the district can transfer $1.23 million of that money into the fund for the final phase at Churchill. That 2.6 in round numbers, 1.23 can be funded out of the current fund. So that leaves 12.47 of actual cost for the base scope of work, the original four school project. And out of that 12.4, we've put in payment applications and have paid 11.6 of that, which leaves 800 and change to be paid yet on that base project. So basically the same thing you've been hearing all along, the numbers are just becoming refined and reliable at this point for Becky's use in terms of planning how much comes out of the original fund balances for the construction project and then what has to be funded elsewhere.
So Becky and I and Jack are working on those final numbers and hopefully have those to the board tomorrow. Just looking at who's here and who's not. So within the next week, you'll have that document to you.
So is it safe then to say that we thought it was going to be 13.7 and it's ended up at 12.4?
Mm-hmm.
Is that what we're saying?
Correct. So basically, we didn't use really any of the... We didn't use anywhere near the original contingency amounts that were in the job and some allowances. And as a result, those funds were able to be captured in the Churchill phase.
Got it. Nice.
That number was like that 1.1?
1.23.
And what's Churchill's total, phase two, Churchill's total budget?
2.23. Churchill phase three?
Yeah.
2.56.
5.6?
Yep.
And have you got any of the contingency on that?
Yes, there has been. That 2.56 has its own contingency, and we have used some of that contingency, but there's still around $80,000 in contingency on that component of work.
Currently, are you temporarily heating the space so that you can pour the floor?
The floor was actually poured previously.
That's in already.
Okay. The floor is in. The floor is in, roof's in, glass is coming in, so... We will likely use some temporary heat, but because of being closed in, it's going to be it's going to be very cost effective versus being open.
Is that being budgeted or is that coming
yes.
up? Okay.
There's some temporary
nice.
Just a quick temperature read. Mm-hmm. Are this higher, lower than with conditions and how the project is going?
The temperature, I'm sorry.
In terms of the $1.23 million,
cost.
Is it the...
You know, we've been tracking, in previous board reports, we've always been around 1.1 and change. I've been mm-hmm. trying to hedge my bets a little bit because I didn't want to overpromise.
Mm-hmm.
So it's very consistent. We've been, from the very beginning of the project, and remember, a lot of this was There was a significant part of this that was a direct result of a previous board decision, which was to advance the schedule on some of the projects. So we had captured, I forget the number off the top of my head, it was hundreds of thousands of dollars, 280 or so, that was in escalation that never was needed to be used. So, you know, there's been a lot of things that have been factored into that.
Yeah, that's great. Thank you.
It wasn't just us, it was the board.
Yeah. Thank you.
Anybody else? Okay.
Thanks very much.
Thank you.
Yeah, I know you're welcome.
Yeah. Yeah. That was good.
That was pretty close.
A little humor there by Mr. Scarmato. And now you can just sit down. Okay. Thank you for letting me make that switch. School improvement plans. Tonight, the principals are going to present their Rising Star plans to the board. The Rising Star plan is what District 41 uses as our school improvement plan. Scott will give an overview of the process itself because it is different than other school improvement plans. This is one that we adopted from the state and we continue to use. But then after Scott does the overview, each principal will talk about their school improvement plan, and then we'll go from each one, and then we'll have questions at the very end for all of them. Does that sound workable?
Yeah.
All right, with that, Scott, would you come on down?
Thank you for being here.
We just thought we didn't know if we were all going to come up or how we were going to do this.
It looks like they left you at the altar.
I see him moving. So, in December of 2013, I gave an overview of the Rising Star process. And so that was about a 45-minute presentation of just kind of the process itself. And I'm going to try and whittle that down to just a couple of minutes here and just kind of give you that, because most of you were on the board or may have been in attendance at that meeting at that point. So, Rising Star is really a process that focuses on school improvement strategies. There's research that has been done. They have gone in and they've looked at effective schools across the country, and they have looked at what do those schools do really well, what are those indicators of high-performing schools. And then they've taken those indicators and they've found the research that go around and support those indicators. And so then we as a team look at those and study them. There's actually 105 indicators in Rising Star that we are asked to take a look at as a team. And then we make some decisions as a team as we look at those. And so as we read through each indicator, we decide, is this something that we're fully implementing? Is it something that we're partially implementing? Or is it something that we're not implementing at all? If it's fully implemented, we just say, great, we're doing that. Let's move on and let's go. But if it's something that is either a partial implementation or no implementation, then we dig a little bit deeper and we ask ourselves a couple other questions. And so we try to give it a priority score. So is this a high priority, a medium priority, or a low priority? And then off of that, we also ask an opportunity score. Is this something that's pretty easy to fix and we can do it right away? Or is it something that might not be as easy to do, but we can still figure it out? Or is it something that might, in some cases, require a change in policy in some way at the district level or a change in budgetary needs? And so we try to look at each of those things, and we get an index score. And so from that, we go through each of those indicators and we have index scores of those ones that are either fully implemented, partially implemented, or not implemented at all. And then as a BLT, we look at those indicators and say, okay, which are the ones that we want to work on? And so we collectively work on what are the ones that are of the greatest importance, and then we try to develop some action plans around those. And then we continually look at those. So what you're going to hear from us tonight are the indicators that we identified last year and kind of what the successes were with each of those indicators. And then also that what we're carrying forward to this year. In some cases, you'll hear schools that have said, we got to the point that we felt like we were a partial implementation, but after putting some things in place, we feel like we're fully implementing now. And we've taken that indicator off the list and we've added another one. And in other cases, you're going to hear some of us are saying that the indicators we're working on last year are still the ones that we're working on this year, and that we just continue to try to make improvements along those lines. So that is a three-minute overview of Rising Star, and I will turn things over to Linda and let her talk a little bit about it.
So
at
number 15, staff 15 members of our Lincoln BLT.
And as Scott was explaining, that we, as a BLP, we determine goals for our school. What you're going to see right now are just the highlights of the plan. Our BLT decided on which of the accomplishments to share with you, narrowing it down with some highlights. So one of our goals for last year was to create a support, to look at the way we're collecting data, especially in terms of the emotional behavioral needs of our Tier 3 students. We felt we had a lot of the other pieces in place, but this is one area we wanted to concentrate on. So over the course of the year, we identified a screener. We used Strengths and Differences Questionnaire, which is an online, free online document that we can use with our kids. It's not done by the kids. It's done by the teachers. They just look at an overview of their class, identify students that may have some needs that we've not been able to address. We've ended up having social academic groups. We call them SAD groups. We started some of that, looked at some curriculum. And then from that, we came up with groups of kids that required or that were able to get some extra interventions. We've had a group that we've called Confident Cats. Those are the kids that were more internalizers. And then the Cool Cats, which were kids who were more externalizers, trying to teach them some behaviors to become more effective in the classroom. We got positive feedback from the students and the teachers that were involved in that program. Our second goal that we really looked at was using student data to make curriculum and instructional decisions. That's something that's always ongoing and is a key component of what we do as a BLT. We looked at, the BLT itself looked at math scores, and we had heard from teachers over and over again that all of our kids at all levels growing? Are our kids that are average? Are our kids that are high? Are our kids that are struggling? Are they all growing? And so our focus is really to take a look at all those groups of kids to determine whether or not they were in line for making 1 year's growth. The second things that we really looked at is our teachers participating in PD with planning. Those are planning days within the building itself, but it included the coach. There really is a lot of PD on what are best instructional practices for kids and teaching different kinds of curriculum areas. And our last one was really taking a look at pre- and post-test data. This was something we're really striving to do, is taking a look at the pre-test, determining from the very beginning which students are well ahead of the learning. So they know a lot of the materials that we're going to be teaching in this particular unit, those kids that have some significant needs, and across the board, what areas do we really need to focus on as we plan instruction for the coming unit. From that, we are able to take that information and actually come up with some enrichment groups and some intervention groups from the data, pre- and post-test data. And our third goal had to do with strengthening relationships with our ELL families. One of the things that talked about in Rising Star, one of the indicators, talks about a two-way communication. We have communication with our ELL families, but it tends to be more one-way, coming from us and really not having them be part and comfort level in the school. Once they're in the school, the language barriers are difficult. And so we really work with our families to come up with a liaison. We work with our ELL, our GCRC, to work on communication, kind of working with them together. We had special parent nights for just our refugee families. We had great turnout. 80% of our parents, almost 100% of our kids came to that, along with just parent academies that we had for all parents. So those are the three that we focused on for last year. The three that we're focusing on for the next 2 years, and that was a decision that our building leadership team made together, because they are big ideas, and we want to do it a survey. The first one is providing a structure and system to support the work of our professional learning communities. Now that we have professional learning communities back in the school day, how are we going to actually best use that time effectively? So really looking at what makes a good PLC. A tool that's readily available is called the Critical Issues Checklist, and it's a checklist that PLCs can use to determine what are those key things that all PLCs should be doing in order to be effective. They were asked to reflect on it. PLCs created SMART goals from that. As the teachers together determine what it is they may want to focus on for this particular quarter, semester, and then they monitor themselves as part of their notes taking every week, and then basically the PLCs are focusing on the four essential questions. The second goal that we have is using data to make curricular instructions. And again, we're looking at really defining our tier two intervention and our tier two intervention meetings. That's when kids are starting to struggle. It's like, what other add-ons can we do? So that kind of discussion happens within the PLC, where all the teachers in the PLC are discussing together what intervention would work. Instructional team, they plan and they differentiate for specific students. And lastly, they're really working at looking at the TLC, which is teachers learning collaboratively, where they go in and observe each other. And they look at others, the way others are instructing, taking tidbits from each other, and growing together. And our third goal has to do with our school culture. Evaluating our culture and climate of the building using data and feedback to make improvements. So as a school, we have what's called a culture club, and we're really taking a close look at the data, especially this last round of data that we just ended up receiving. I know he's coming to the board shortly. As BLT members, we're really looking at being ambassadors, having those difficult conversations when necessary, working collectively, addressing concerns in a productive manner. And then our socials committee, we'll really be looking at ways of building relationships through some kind of social committee, social outings, and how to help each other during those stressful periods of time. So those are our three goals for this coming year, and actually we're using them over the next 2 years.
Thanks, Linda.
Thank you.
So I want to put in a short commercial for this. Is this online now?
Just
so maybe not, but at least for people in here, I think we have these available. This is an acronym abbreviation terminology sheet. So in this, we're using a lot of acronyms, and the key to them are on the sheet. I think you'll know more about it.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Hello.
Yeah.
Good to see everyone. I'm just filling in for Kirk tonight. I just want to say quickly that our BLT team at Franklin is made up of 17 members of our staff. We have two administrators, two support staff members, and 13 certified staff members. And you're going to notice in my six slides tonight that our goals from last year, from 2014-15, we kept the same indicators for this year as well. And the reasoning behind that, when you see reference in our goals or the indicators to the document, that is their language. The document that we're referring to is the D41 model that every staff member received. And I'll refer to this a couple of times during my presentation. We felt that rather than look at it as a checklist of things that we wanted to accomplish as a team and move on to new ones this year, that we felt that there were some best practices that we really needed to refine. And they are connected through PBIS, PLC, RTI, and the D41 model. And we felt like it was a good chance this year to really hone in even more and unpack the D41 model and recognize those best practices that would support our kids at Franklin. So when I repeat, I'm not repeating myself to an extent when I go through my next three slides for this year, but I'll have different things to share on what we did last year compared to this year. So our first goal, maintain positive changes to improve student learning. Some of the things that we put into place last year at Ben Franklin and carried over from years before were Franklin families. Each teacher or staff member has 10 students that are assigned a family, and we use that to deliver our cool tools, PBIS, positive behavior system. This year we're using it to deliver our anti-bullying curriculum as well that we mentioned to you last year. We also did small things, email shout-outs to staff and recognize staff through the Ben Award every 2 weeks at our staff meetings. And something we started last year, you know, if we have certain students that we know have worked real hard at Ben Franklin, we've recognized the teachers, and there have been times we've asked, named a student at our meetings and asked the teachers to stand up if they work with the student. And it's neat to see that recognition, like that common strand with the student going through the staff members. And that's always a great way to start our Fridays. As well, we're doing Class Dojo and PBIS, Behavior Intervention System. We've done that for the last couple of years, and I feel like Franklin's been a leader on that in the district. Our social worker and school psychologists have worked very hard with that. We end our year with a school-wide celebration where students receive awards based on effort, academics, the Ben's Bees, being an exemplary citizen of our school. We also are a model school for PBLs. In the last couple of years, we've had schools from all over the country, not just the state, visit Ben Franklin. And I think that's built a lot of pride in our school. We're very used to seeing people walk through our building, and we take it as a source of pride that we're recognized in that. So strengthening organizational communication around learning. One of the things we have, like we mentioned, is the D41 model. And what we decided this year as a BLT team, that when we were going to present to our staff the changes, the reintegration of PBIS, the reintegration of some RTI components, as well as PLCs with our professional learning communities, that we thought rather than, you know, having three different documents that weren't related to a core, that we would base everything revolved around our D41 model. So that's the document that we're referring to in the other slides. This is the document that aligns standards, curriculum, instruction, and assessment. Like I said earlier, we carried over, we talked to the staff, and we carried this over, and we're still unpacking the D41 model. There have been times at our staff meetings where we'll have different staff members or teams break down part of it and kind of reflect on it within the schools, within our staff meeting, on what it means to them and how it applies to their classroom, how it applies to the students. And we see a lot of value in this, actually, based on, you know, student-centered, collaborative learning, cooperative learning. And so we found that this, you know, it touches upon everything. It's connected to almost anything that we do every day. So the better we know it, you know, the better we'll be applying it within our classrooms. Everything revolves around best practices, and it states that clearly in there. Parent engagement group, PEG. This is something that started 4 or 5 years ago. We have a population at Franklin that we noticed when we had students and parents come to our conference night, our curriculum nights, anything PTA was doing, that there's a population of students whose families were not attending. So what we did, we've done some larger things and some subtle things. One of the subtle things that we did is 4 or 5 of us last year took 10 of these families, and we'd call them anytime that we had something going on at Franklin to increase their participation. The last couple of years before school started, that first day of meet and greet, we invited them over, supplied transportation. We had translators, and they got to see their teachers, and we gave them tours of the building, and we provided lunch. And they've just been a really great way to start our year. And we've noticed that participation among some of our families has really increased due to that. And we also, like I said, reach out anytime, informally, formally, hard copy, phone, email, text, any way we can to get them to realize that they're welcome at Franklin, and we love seeing them come to our school. And then last year, our last goal, provide professional collaboration. We really kicked it up a notch last year with our PLC team, our PLC meetings. We attended many unpacking of the standards, especially in the Common Core. We're really new to the district. We started a couple years ago. We did the backward design model with the math. We're starting to do that with some of the literacy, but they've always kind of been on it anyways. We have great coaches in this district that do a great job of making sure that we're prepared for any of the changes in our curriculum. District and building level planning sessions. The administrators tried to go as many as we could. I always like to say school happens, so on our way out the door sometimes we don't actually make it out the door. We get close, but we do what we can. And then the RTI professional development, I know that we're getting ready to kind of get that going, re-kick it up a little bit more focused this year after the new year. And I know that our staff, you know, it revolves around everything we do, levels of support for our students. And it's just great to go to these PLC meetings with our teachers and hear them talking about kids and specific kids or group of kids or how they can improve their strategies or their instruction. It's great to hear these student-centered meetings going on all the time. So the next three slides are this year. Again, like I said, you'll see some of the same ones, maintain positive changes. Our focus, maintaining what we did last year, as well as focusing more on PEG. You know, we had certain staff members that left our school, and Teresa Shea was awesome helping us with that. She's at Hadley now. So we're really looking, you know, to see what else we need to do for that. You know, keep those families coming, make sure they're as welcome as Franklin as everyone else. Our Franklin family, keeping that up as well, we decided to scale it back a little bit. Kindergarten isn't doing it this year. It's interesting, you know, you have a kindergartner in your Franklin family, and half the time we'd be hoping they make it where they need to go throughout the building, and then following them back. So we still have our Franklin families, and that is the vehicle we're using to deliver our anti-bullying instruction, as well as our cool tool models for positive behavior, BEN's Bees, be responsible, respectful, and safe. And then again, our goal is to increase more time for academics, and by creating this positive atmosphere at a school, more time for academics, less time on redirecting and things such as that. Strengthening organizational communication around learning. Kirk Burt Bulletin, we're lucky our names rhyme. It wouldn't sound as good if they didn't. But we have an office meeting every Friday, and we send out a Kirk Burt Bulletin on everything that's coming up at Franklin the next week. I have to admit, that's mainly Kirk. He does a great job of touching upon the different groups around school to see who needs to know what, who needs to be where, and making sure everyone's aware of it. So that's been we've gotten a lot of positive feedback on that. Again, increasing the understanding of the D41 model, what's expected with PLCs and the RTI models. Kirk and I attend at least 3 PLC meetings a week each. We divvied up the grade levels, and then we tend to swap. And it's just amazing to see the communication that's going on there between the teachers talking about kids, sharing kids, talking about this strategy worked for me, maybe it'll work for you. Just getting all that really enriched conversation going at these meetings to hear, you know, they have 20 minutes, they talk for 20 minutes. And we know teachers, I was a teacher, I could somehow talk for 30 minutes in 20 minutes. But, you know, we're always talking about kids, and I think that's just kudos to our teachers. And then the last one, improve professional collaboration to increase the learning. This is a big one with the PLCs, again, like I just mentioned. Our focus with these PLCs, I have specific examples, and I'm very proud of our staff going to these PLC meetings, taking those components of PLC collaboration, talking about students, providing data to see who's struggling or who needs to be enriched or extended. And, for example, sitting in our kindergarten meeting, they talked about a big idea of how to, and they're able to take that how-to idea and connect it to literacy and math components, as well as the new generation science standards. And then they had a way of talking with pre- and post-assessments on who was struggling and who was ready for reteaching, and out of our two teachers, who would be doing that. They do amazing jobs with that. Our second grade team has done fantastic with their PLCs. They talk about increasing fact fluency and setting aside time at the beginning of each math session, sharing kids instead of one teacher trying to see four or five groups. They're able to share, have kids in common or abilities in common or needs in common. And then our fifth grade literacy level three, are really working hard on a writing intervention, which we've kind of struggled with over the years. But this enriched conversation or our PLC meetings have really, really lifted off the ground, and they've found common goals and a way that they could work on meeting the kids' needs in writing based on pre- and post-assessments.
That's great.
I think that's it.
Thank you, Jeff. Much, yeah.
Cool.
Scott?
So one of the things you're going to notice about all of my indicators is that they're the words Title I requirement after. And there are actually, of the 105 indicators I mentioned before, there are 13 of them that are specific to Title I schools that need to be looked at. And so we, as a school, as a BLT, look at those first and try to assess those, and those are the ones that we felt like we really had to address. And so, and one other piece, just as you look at our slides, just for clarification, just so you know, here, the Rising Star indicator, this is the actual language that is in the research that we see when we look at the site, and then we each tried to take it and kind of put it into our own words in terms of what that means for us. And so my first one here talks about written statements of purpose, and my building leadership team, we kind of realized that we needed to look at our structure and look at how we were doing running our meetings and getting a chance to look at our school improvement goals. And so last year we spent some time looking at how we could restructure things. We developed some subgroup areas for our meetings to really make us more efficient. And then we asked the subgroups to kind of take a look at each of their areas and then what work they wanted to work on last year. We're continuing that on this year, if you would. Our second goal deals with just the academic and social-emotional needs of students. We felt like from an academic standpoint we were doing a pretty good job, but we felt social-emotional was one area that we maybe could address a little bit more. You've heard Jeff talk about Franklin families and some different pieces and some different schools are already doing some things, but one area we wanted to have an impact and focus on was how we ran our Wolfpack meetings every month and what we did to promote that social connection within the school. But another big piece that we really did with this was we researched and identified the BASC-2, which is the Behavioral Assessment System for Children, which is a social-emotional screener for students in grades 3 through 5. Sounds like something similar to what maybe Lincoln might have used. And in hearing these presentations, like, we might want to reach out and have some conversations about how you did that. But something that we identified last year as this was something we knew we wanted to do. So that was the work that we did last year. Mike, if you will. A third one was to promote that teacher growth through collaboration and professional development. And this is where my coaches, instructional coaches, really come into play with working with the classroom teachers and trying to get in and co-teach, to model lessons, to work with teachers and help them develop their strengths further, and also those areas where they feel like they want to grow professionally. And so we did some work last year with just some targeted professional development and getting the coaches into the room more often. And the coaches were meeting regularly with grade level teams throughout the year. And then from a data perspective, we felt like this one was very important, was kind of the central focus to what we were doing as a building leadership team, to look at data. And so to look at data regularly, so this team got together and we developed a calendar, which we had to go back and change just off of for instance, park data. We're still waiting on park data. We had it on the calendar to look at it 4 months ago. Haven't seen it yet, so we know that we've had to make some adjustments to some of those pieces. But we did create a subgroup within BLT to just look specifically at data and then to how we can use that data to inform our professional development within the building. So that was what we worked on last year. And then flipping ahead to this year, again, with that first, we're going to continue to have those three subgroups meet. We have a vocabulary goal, a data goal, and then we've added a parent involvement piece as part of Title I as well. We want to really look at what we can do to get parents involved more within the school. And so every month when we get together, the vocabulary group has tasks that they're working on, data group, and then the parent involvement group. And so each subgroup this year will be developing some SMART goals that they want to have for their area that we can then take to the building teams and say, okay, here are the building leadership areas that we're working on. How can we help you support these within the building? And then I'm going to ask that each subgroup then develop their action plans for accomplishing this work within those goal areas. Back to the academic, social-emotional piece. We're going to give the bachelor. We have not given it yet, and so we're going to be able to give that this year and then look at those results and then determine what next steps we need to do in terms of supporting kids. We've structured our monthly Wolfpack meetings a little bit different. We've included the social thinking curriculum. My special education resource teachers came back from a workshop last spring and said, Scott, we really feel like this is something that we can use across the building, school-wide, for all students to help them know expected and unexpected behaviors. And there's a common language that we can use within the building. And so they have worked with building leadership team and me to kind of structure those Wolfpack meetings so that we are teaching some of those skills throughout. And then we're continuing on with our PBIS and those positive supports within the building. The teacher growth through collaboration. My coaches met with all of the teachers at the beginning of the year this year and asked them to identify an area where they wanted to grow professionally. And so the coaches took a look at those goals, and they are going to work with some of those teachers through the instructional coaching model. They went to a Jim Knight workshop, and they've done a lot of work. Karen has actually done a lot of work with the coaches with the Jim Knight instructional coaching model. And so I've asked each of my coaches to identify 4 to 6 teachers to work through that instructional coaching model with, and so they will be working on that this year. And then finally, analyzing the data, we will continue. We've revamped the calendar a little bit and adjusted it, and we've asked that we've tried to increase our emphasis on aligning that student performance and what we can do to where are the needs that we have that we can then match with professional development needs within the building. And you've heard those data protocols that we want to take back to the teams, and we want to have teams working with. I want to go to my BLT and be able to look at data with them and say, here's a protocol that you can then use, and then they can then take back to their teams and use that as well. So as leaders in the building, we do, as Jeff mentioned, we have representation from every grade level on my BLT. I want to be able to teach them those pieces and then be able to have them take it back and use it effectively within their teams.
Thank you, sir.
Thanks, Scott.
Mary?
So last year, our first goal was to look at aligning our units of study with the Common Core state standards, as well as the early learning and development standards, because we do have the pre-K, so our pre-K teachers use those. So our early childhood and pre-K teachers were using those early learning standards to guide their instruction and their assessments, and they can continue to develop and revise their instruction based on those. Our math teachers were creating and revising their aligned units of study, and last year in their revision, they were looking to increase rigor. Same with literacy. Creating and revising their units of study, and in their revision, increasing rigor. Our second goal was to review our building data at least 3 times per year. So in our PLC meetings, we do look at formative assessments and talk about how that should be put into their planning for the week with their students. We look at their Fontes and Pinnell benchmarking assessments, that is their reading level, and their MAP test results at least three times per year. ISAT was analyzed last year. In our PLCs, they meet with me after each MAP administration, and we look at what are the strengths in that data for opportunities for enrichment, and then what are areas of concern which they should target in their interventions for the grade level, for the class, because the class data may be different, and then down to the student level. Individual student goal setting is done after each test administration. So after the fall, the teachers will sit down with each child. They will set individual goals for what they want to do, and then remind them before they take winter what they're working towards, and then they reset after the winter and the spring administration, and hopefully there are a lot of successes to celebrate with the individual students. Tier 2 and Tier 3 interventions then are identified as students are put on remediation and intervention groups, and we look at those on at least every 8 weeks, sometimes a little sooner than 8 weeks. My third goal, and this is a new goal for us this year, but we've already accomplished some of our things, so I wanted to bring that up. Instructional teams are wanting to create our highly functioning professional learning communities to increase our student achievement. So far, our teams are meeting daily for 30 to 45 minutes, and we are currently emphasizing the four critical questions, which are: what do we want students to learn? How will we know when they've learned it? What do we want? What will we do if they already know it? And what will we do if they're struggling? Then we will, they document their discussions in their daily note-taking. They have team discussions and reflect weekly on their effectiveness as a PLC. And then integrating the literacy and math coaches into those meetings, as well as Katie and I go in on a regular basis as well. And then we try to include our LBS 1 teachers, which is our special ed resource teachers, digital literacy specialist, PBL coach, ESL, and other members of the support team as we can bring them into those meetings. And then our fourth goal is to identify professional development topics that will benefit our staff. This is done with our building leadership team members, kind of generating and synthesizing topics to share with our professional development team representatives so they can take that back when we're doing district PD planning. And also, we also generate as a staff what topics do teachers want more professional development in, so that our staff meetings, which we hold twice a month, will focus on those topics. This, we feel that we accomplished last year to have a system in place for this to sustain throughout this year and into the future. So we have removed that as a goal for this school year. So for this upcoming school year, we're going to continue to work on those units of study using Common Core State Standards and Next Generation Science Standards and the Illinois Early Learning and Development Standards. So again, we're going to continue, our pre-K EC are going to continue to review and revise their curriculum based on student performance and assessment results, and then make sure that they're addressing intervention and enrichment needs. And then for our K-5 math and literacy, they are working with their common assessments and making sure that they are working toward the standards that they've identified for each unit, and we're always looking to put more rigor into those units. Our second goal is to continue to look at data at least three times per year. So teachers will analyze their data after each MAP administration, and individual student goals will be set and reviewed at each time. Literacy teachers will monitor their reading levels and provide interventions for Tier 2 and Tier 3 students. So our goal is to get everyone to meet the grade level targets by the end of the school year. STEAM teachers will monitor their students' performance and provide interventions so that they will meet grade level targets by the end of the school year. PLC teams will monitor those interventions and enrichment opportunities along with our coaches and building administrators to make sure that we're using data to make sure that we're intervening and enriching appropriately. And then the building leadership team will monitor that MAP data after each test administration. And three times a year, we monitor the building as a whole for how many students are reading on grade level for that time of the year, and how many are struggling, and what are we doing to intervene. And then as soon as we get PARC data, we'll add that in for season two. And then our third goal for the year is to work on those high-functioning PLCs. Our teams have all created and follow their norms. They identified action goals based on reviewing 18 components of highly effective professional learning community teams. So they identified of those 18 the one, two, or three goals that they really wanted to hone in and work on. We're going to review that again in January, maybe reset goals, and then at the end of the year to set for next year. We're always analyzing data, both formative and summative assessments. We're looking to identify practices that are effective for our students, and making sure that if they're not effective, we're abandoning them. If they need some adjustment, or if they're working for us, that we continue to do that. We're working to create SMART goals that will focus on results. Ask PLC teams to reflect weekly in their template, and always we want them to celebrate successes.
Thank you, Mary. Steve?
Hi, Brady.
Hello, Steve.
Hello, Steve.
So when you have 105 things to choose from, you want to try to find those ones that have the most impact in your building and also complement the work that you're doing. So back 2 years ago, 2014-15, Hadley embarked on the one-to-one initiative. Every student had a Chromebook in front of them. We had a lot of catching up to do. That was a large undertaking to roll those out. Well, but then we had to start bringing, using them in the classroom and getting everybody trained and up to speed on that. And so last year in our technology, we knew that was going to be one of our goals. It had to be with the Chromebooks on our plate. So such as streamlining our websites, training our teachers, implementing new databases, new programs, was really the focus of getting it in play. We had, not everybody was used to Google Docs, a process of sharing, teaching kids how to share documents, and then the whole security and then just the usage and literacy and not deleting each other's work when they're in there. I mean, just the gamut of Google Docs was just 1 year. That was a big step for us. Google Forms is actually, we use that all the time now, but last year it was brand new. So when you're done teaching something, many times you do an exit slips on postcards, on a piece of paper. Now what it looks like, we just flip open our Chromebook, answer a couple quick questions, shows up on a spreadsheet on the teacher's desk. So, you're going to see the same goal here this year, but if you could look at the growth at the end of this year in a two-year spread, it's going to be pretty phenomenal. Bringing in new programs, we have the online textbooks, but then those supplements like STEM scopes. And the tech tip is Chris Abbott is our digital media specialist, and he's awesome. He gets into the PLCs, he tapes himself, he coaches. He does it to coach, he goes in and coaches. So that was our big step last year in the area of technology. Our second one is we're always working. Hadley is large, 1,200 students. Over 65 teachers teaching, and we are always trying to make that place smaller for kids. Smaller because then they can connect with the teacher, connect with the curriculum, connect with the program. And what our goal is, we want kids, we want them to come to school. We want them to feel good when they're there. So the environment is a major focus for us. using teams and teaming, team names, team flags, team chants, whatever it is, that team unity and team identification was a big part for us last year. We formed a mental health committee, and that's going to follow through with our work this year. Huge push on their ESL family nights, and then also we had a new health curriculum that leveled out for 6th, 7th, and 8th grade, made that age appropriate for all the kids. And that was a huge step forward in making our students, making it age appropriate for the students based on their grade level. Goal 3. So the other one is the new science standards, NGSS, and then this year we have the new social studies standards called C3. We have the Common Core standards for math and literacy, and trying to get all of our work together into a document, trying to get everybody moving forward together so that we have standards-based instruction for all of our kids was the goal. And so last year we started that work of just bringing that focus in and corralling all of our energy so that we could move forward and get to the point of the assessments we're going to be this year. The big change for us was the instructional coaches, they're the experts with the standards, so they're in helping with the writing, the planning, and the designing of the lessons and the units, but also moving all of our self-contained special education rooms into more of a standards-based instruction as well, so that all kids are getting the same type of exposure to the standards that they're going to be tested on, we expect them to know. So we start this year, and we went back to our list, and we just tried to decide what did we want to add on to. And we felt that our work with technology still wasn't done. Our work with the climate in our building still wasn't done. But we did add one to the last slide. So our first one here is, if you, again, that growth that's going to occur over 2 years and handling with technology is going to be amazing, because on Monday the 30th, we're sending those Chromebooks home for the first time. We've had some parent nights. We're ready to take that next big step. And so what we envision is a child goes home on Monday, they sit down wherever they are with their Chromebook, just like the ones you have there. They flip them open, and it's going to link directly to a teacher portal, a teacher website, and they can turn in the homework, they can do the homework, they can do their assignments, they can do the reading. I was in the PE class the other day, and there were 30 kids with polar heart rate monitors on. And it was like Orange Theory Fitness, because it Bluetooths into this projector, and it shines 30 little grids up on the wall, and all these kids are trying to keep their grid in orange. And they were like, if they couldn't find the machine that they wanted to, they were like just moving about the fitness lab. Mm-hmm. And I never have seen seventh graders so motivated to stay moving for 30 minutes. Blew me away. So this polar heart rate monitors, like, and the daily fit log is something we use on the Chromebooks as well. So you're seeing the technology. I mean, when you see it in PE, you know, you're really making some gains with that as well. Last thing at the last Institute Day is we took time, we had teachers move around, and all the other teachers that are doing cool things like this polar heart rate monitor were able to show and tell, teach us all a little bit more to expand our capabilities there. Goal number 2 for this year. So about a month ago, 5 weeks ago, we had an 8th grade suicide awareness training for 8th grade students through a program called Alyssa's Mission. 43 students were identified as needing some kind of touch-based intervention from our social workers and our psychologists. Now there's 380 of them, so percentage-wise, we're a pretty healthy group. But still, there are 43 kids that were crying out for help through some survey and through one-on-one interaction. We touched base with them because that's the mental health piece to creating the environment we want in our building there. That's called the SOS program. We have at the other end, 6th grade, we have a student ambassador group, serve with our 6th graders, also a new program in the summer called Welcome to the Den. So we're building the transition from 5th to 6th grade, making that stronger, but also, again, trying to create a safety net for all of our kids and feeling like they belong at our school. And last, the big goal for this year. Okay, so here it is again. We're still working on our curriculum. We're finishing the curriculum unit planning, the curriculum guides. So they're going up online. They're attached to the PLC websites, the teacher websites. So if you go to any of our teachers' websites, we kind of have a standard template. One of them is the curriculum guide or the unit guide. That's what we're working on there. But the big one this year is the unit pretest and post-test are administered to all students. So you think about all the number of, not quizzes, but all the number of big tests that are given in the junior high and middle school. There's a lot of them. So this right here, this second part of that indicator is really a huge undertaking. Because now we're looking at every unit test, and now we're making sure there's a pretest and a post-test to it. If you have a child in Hadley, you maybe start seeing pretests are popping up in the formative part on the grade book. Because as we're getting them done, we're rolling them out. So this whole thing about developing the curriculum is one part. Now we have to make sure that we're assessing it correctly and setting the kids up on the pretests as well. So how do we get that done? We got to get some time for our science teachers. They're the ones that are under a lot of pressure because they need to be 100% done with all the NGSS units by the end of the year. So that's a big goal for us here. The pretests, that's everybody across the board. We're all talking about pretests and our curriculum and what we need to have our kids work on. And then just the common assessments. We can't really do pretest, post-test if we don't have solid regular tests, and we're wrapping that process up. So this curriculum, this two-year curriculum goal has been huge for us, and we're now in that final phase of the assessments.
All right. Steve, thank you. So you'll see that these are different school improvement plans than plans of old, or even if other school districts are doing some different plans. These are some bigger, high-leverage strategies that improve the school overall. One of the things that you'll notice is professional learning communities was highlighted throughout almost every one of them. And John Hattie's new book, John Hattie does educational research. He looks at all the research out there. He does meta-analysis and begins to rank what are those most effective strategies. And in his latest edition, which will be coming out in the next month or so, professional learning communities will be at that top of that list as the most effective. And we believe in that. We believe in the strategies. And there's many layers to professional learning communities, but it's why you do see it on a consistent basis throughout. But with that, I'll hand it over to the board for questions to the principals. You guys want to come up here?
Yeah,
you look like you're on a lineup.
Yeah.
Just need some numbers up there.
I have a comment, not a question.
Please.
Okay.
It's yours.
One thing I'd like to comment on is I expected to see the stuff around testing. I expected you to see data and the rigor. What I was really happy to see is I think each one of you, Lincoln, it was Parent Academies and an outreach program. Franklin, it was PEG, which I think is your parent engagement group. Churchill, you had a parent involvement piece in there. Forest Glen, I know you've already gone through this with your early learning and how you include the parents with that. And then Hadley, you talked about ESL Family Nights and Parent Education Night. To me, that's really important because while we have all the confidence in the world in the staff that we have and the teachers, when you start to engage the parents the way you guys are doing it, that's where you're going to see some real good gains, especially when you're going to find the ones that aren't showing up at the school. And I think that's great. I encourage you to keep doing that. It's wonderful.
We actually have parents on our BLTs as well. It's another piece that I know we talked about. It. So there are parent representations. So each one of my subgroups, there's a parent that's a part of that group. And so I don't know how others do it as well. But so it's another important voice in the conversation.
Well, one of the first things I did on the board was go to one of your parent nights, and I was really surprised at the number of parents that you had and all the kids with them. So it's great stuff.
Other questions, comments?
I had about 100, but I'll limit it a little bit. BLT, Scott, that was one of my questions. How is the BLT selected from the parent all the way to the staff people?
There's an election process through the union that's outlined in the contract that I don't have a part of. They inform me of where the elections are. We have We try to hit every grade level or have a representation. You actually have a kindergarten rep, a first grade rep. At level two, we try to have a literacy and a STEAM rep. Same thing at level three. And then you try to have other pieces as well in terms of having specialists or involved with that. So they have an election that is through their contract of 3-year term, a 2-year term, and a 1-year term. And so it's so you didn't have like a group that was elected and everybody leaves at once. And so they so that's one of the pieces that they do. Parents, probably an area where we probably need to figure out a way to have something that would be a consistent way of looking at that, because we what I've typically done is I've gone and I've had everything in my this is my 11th year now, and we started the first 4 or 5 years we didn't have a parent rep, and then we've had parent reps through PTA and just kind of putting the word out saying, hey, is anyone interested? But even within that, there's probably some need to look at how they are. Do they serve a length of time as well? So it's not the same person that's on for a longer period of time. So, but that's not something that's the other piece is contractual and laid out that we need to follow. The parent piece is probably one that we probably need to have that bigger conversation with PTA about how we look at doing that to make it work. So.
Mine is parents are through a committee, just the way they get their PTA volunteers. They put it out as a committee that parents can join, and then they can put their name in the hat to join. I have 3 parents this year, plus a rotating PTA exec board member. So I'll have up to 4 parents at every meeting.
What else? I noticed on the Rising Star review it says greater focus on overall school improvement strategies rather than data, and I was a little confused by that because I saw, like Forest Glen using a lot of data to analyze stuff, which I'm okay with, but I'm kind of confused by rather than data because does that mean we're getting away from data or what?
No, I think that's the problem as we were talking about what to put on that slide and to do that overview. A lot of school improvement plans you see are just, it's a SMART goal that, and in the past we used to use it, just a SMART goal that you had and there wasn't anything around it. And so where this focuses really on those structural pieces and making sure those pieces are in place, then as a subset of that, then you can have data that is there that you can be able to look at. But I think that's where that statement probably came from, as we were just trying to, again, I was trying to take a 30-minute presentation and knock it down into you know, 3 to 5 minutes. And so, but it's less, it's not your traditional school improvement plan where you may see just about a number. It's really looking at the processes and making sure that those strategies are in place and being looked at. Anyone else want to?
No, I feel the same way. Even if you look at the goals that are related to like PLC, just that was, you know, very clear in collaboration and cooperative learning and working together. A couple of layers down, you know, you're going to measure how that's going, how often they're talking about students' specific goals by looking at the math and the composite finale. You do have to look at the numbers eventually, but I think right now we're building those processes to get us to that point, just those collaborative learning communities.
And every one of those 107 indicators that we go through has research behind it. There's documents that go with every indicator called WiseWays, and the WiseWays really list all the data, all the research that goes behind these best practices. And the idea is that these best practices are in place, kids are going to learn.
Yeah, and that was a comment I was going to make at the end. A lot of these to me seem like best practices. I mean, you're just writing them down in terms of that. The other thing is, I was looking through this today. It dawned on, I was trying to wrap my head around all this, because in my way I was looking at it like, well, should we just be doing this stuff? I mean, you know, we really have to write it down. But as I thought that way, I started to think, how do we align this with like an initiative like Think Tank? I mean, how are those things? I mean, we have Think Tank, we have PBLs. How are we aligning these goals with that, or how do they fit together? I mean, it seems like to me, as I try and again, I'm trying to wrap my head around it. It's like we've got these pieces over here, and we've got these, and then I don't think I heard Think Tank at all in here, maybe, or specialization, or any of those kinds of things. I think I heard PBL a couple of times, and maybe it's in the D41 model. I've never been presented the D41 model, so I don't even know what that is. But maybe Paul could get that copy to us.
I think we have. Has been sent to us.
Well, it could be on the website, but as a board member, I think I probably handed the D41 model as part of my, you know, first day on the job. But that was just me. So, but I guess for me, how does that wrap around How are you integrating those, or how, you know, so I can understand this, I guess.
Okay, I think one of the things that we have, that those 107 indicators are all are aligned with different components. So things like curriculum, parenting,
instruction,
all those types of things, and all the components of our D41 model kind of fit into different areas. So like the PLCs, for example, which is part of our D41 model, there are many indicators that are aligned to PLCs. On instruction, there's many different indicators aligned to instruction. And when you look down, it is teacher capacity. All those kinds of things are outlined in those 107 indicators. So when you say, you know, what we're doing in our model, you know, they may not be worded exactly the same way, but there's indicators that are aligned to them in many different ways. So you really have to look at the indicators and what big goal area they're under. And in many cases, sometimes it's more than one goal area, actually.
Mm-hmm. And I think maybe the specialization probably comes into play with just having the frequency to meet with Java-like peers, like level 3 literacy working together, instead of, I know in the past, trying to find PLC time for multiple subjects. Mm-hmm. You know, if you're a level 3 literacy teacher, you're meeting, you know, hopefully 5 times a week, talking about your kids and your instruction based on that level 3 literacy. So that's one of the aspects where it could come into play with that PLC model, and being really specific, talking about your instructional strategies, or, you know, whether it's enrichment or extension that you're looking for. That's where that component comes. So if you heard like the PLC, you know, that's where one of the components of think tank specialization probably supports it very well, just for having more time, Java-like peers talking about that subject, improving your instructional strategies.
Wouldn't you have that though anyways, even if you were teaching? I mean, first grade teachers are not specializing, so they're certainly meeting, and they're maybe talking about all the core parts of it. But so I guess I disagree with that last part, but that's okay. That's a reasonable answer. I only have a couple more, I promise.
Mm-hmm.
One was just, I was confused. Mary used the term Common Core State Standards. I guess where I was confused, they're not. We don't have state standards anymore. I mean, their Common Core is a federal standard that some states, 13 or 14 or 17 states, adopted, right?
Most of the states adopted Common Core. Okay. So what the state then does is adopt them, and they become the Illinois state standards. We continue to use, you know, that terminology, the Common Core,
okay,
to identify the literacy and math. And as you heard up here, the NGSS, the science standards, and then the 3CL will be the social studies. But ultimately, the state, each state has to adopt their standards and say, this is what Illinois, Indiana, or whatever else are setting as their standards.
Illinois and Indiana is the same if they've adopted Common
Core? If they've adopted Common Core, okay, they are. Or if they've adopted NGSS or the 3Cs.
Okay.
Yeah, all the states who adopt those are similar. They may make some slight adjustments state by state, but for the most part, they try to stay within that umbrella.
And then my last question was and I noticed with Forest Glen, you guys were very heavy in looking at data, you know, in terms of positioning yourself. But I'm assuming that the other schools, even though they're not using that, you are, or you're not, or I'm assuming you are. You're just not.
I've got a whole goal. I mean, one of my subgroups is we're looking at data on a regular basis, and we're looking at looking at anything from math to ISIL scores to even the SMART goals that we're going to be doing some setting around those other subgroups. We've got a vocabulary goal in my building of how we can introduce kids to more vocabulary words to enrich their just understanding and build their background knowledge and help their reading comprehension overall. That's going to be something I'm going to ask that subgroup to. Let's develop a goal around that. How are we going to know that that's working, the strategies that we're doing, the things that we're doing? So while you didn't necessarily see it in the plan, there are data pieces in there for probably for each of us, but I know for my thing.
And then built into the PLC structure is to regularly look at data.
Yeah, because you guys spell it out pretty specifically. So is Lincoln or is Churchill? I mean, are you guys looking at, you know, math is pretty obvious. You're probably looking at it, I don't know, fall, winter, spring. But in terms of everything, I mean, that specific, are you guys that specific in looking at the data? I guess what I'm getting at, I get a little bit concerned because I think we are at times operating autonomously as you know, it's not District 41, but it's like Churchill Corporation is. And so for me, I'd like to know that we're looking at some of the same data points, and we're, you know, I know at one point, I mean, Scott, you even said, I don't know if it was to LinkedIn or whatever, but you said maybe we should, maybe you guys could have some PLC time.
So
that was probably good.
Right.
I think the other thing that would be important for you all to know is that we are our own PLC. So when we meet on a weekly basis for a couple hours, we're talking about what's happening. We look at data together. We have conversation. We have our PLC agenda, basically. It's our evidence agenda that's dealing with a lot of the kinds of things that we all need to be addressing, because the true PLC is at the highest level. We own all kids, regardless of what school they go to.
Thanks.
Other comments or questions?
I had a couple of questions. This
sure.
One's maybe, I don't want to call it to you directly.
Okay.
I think you answered this last meeting.
Okay.
My brain is just not pulling that information out. But why exactly do we do what Rising Star? Like, I know we have to, don't we? We had to adopt some
Churchill.
Sort of a...
Churchill has to,
okay,
because they're a title program.
Okay.
So they use Title I.
But we just decided. I mean,
we said we're all in.
We could use other things. Star was the one we chose. Right?
Correct.
Okay.
Yeah.
I knew that's what you told.
Yep.
And we decided to do it for everyone.
Correct.
Because I guess the question I had, so I kind of went and looked at Rising Star to see what they're all about, and you know the one thing that. Like on their website that they show, it's like it seems like their main objective, I print this out, is to, like, they showed evidence of effectiveness of using their kind of program or model, and it shows, like, they were looking at gains and reading scores and students showing an increase in students that are scoring proficient or better in math and reading. And so it seems like their main objective in doing all this is to really increase to show an increase in scores or growth, right?
Yep. So, and I think Linda said that overall these structures are to do that,
right.
Are to increase student achievement overall by having highly effective PLCs, by having a highly engaged community, parent community, and others. We will see increased scores. So it's working on those big leverage strategies, and then you will get to that student achievement continue to grow. But one of the things that they do, Scott, it looks like you're...
And one piece to add is that this is through... the program is housed through NIU, Northern Illinois University, but it's tied directly to the Illinois Interactive Report Card, which is something that all schools are expected to publish. And our scores are... I mean, that's how our scores are... Those will be published and are out there. So it does kind of marry itself and tie together. I was... thinking of my overview, I should have included that. So, but yeah, it is tied to NIU and the IRC.
So do we have to
a few more?
Yeah,
yeah.
So do we have to publish any reports or data that demonstrate this, or is it just our whole report?
Scott, again.
Does only Churchill have to report?
Scott has to send it to the state. So what the state happened with the waiver from 2 years ago. Around AYP, they said, you know what, we don't need those sent to us. In reality, what's the state doing with we have over 900 districts. I can't imagine how many schools we have, and everybody sent it to them. I can't imagine what they would do with them. So they've said that's not a great practice we instituted. So title schools, because of their federal funds tied directly to them, Scott still has to do that. So our requirement, and all everyone else's as well, is... you don't have to send them to the state any longer. There's no approval process any longer through that waiver that occurred 2 years ago.
Okay. You just still have to have something.
You have to have, yeah. Okay. Yeah, and some people use the Rising Star, and others use probably a more traditional school improvement plan.
Okay. Sorry.
No. It's a real good question.
And I think, I mean, kind of to just what Kurt said, like, I think in everything that everyone presented, it's definitely like best practices and good things to be working on. And I hope, you know, obviously things can vary at buildings. There's varying needs, but it would be good to make sure to, like, we're reporting out and comparing. And but I definitely would like to see, I think, maybe it's more we just reported out here, but kind of at a higher level, how it all ties into, you know, our District 41 model and things we're doing. Because I think at the building level, it's a little bit more... I can't think of the words. But I think we need to, at a district level, also be looking at that besides me just looking at it at a building level.
I'm just saying you want to see, I had the same thought as we're talking about. I'd like to see, it sounds like Scott would see that, but I'd like to see, because, I too looked at the website, and they clearly show, in 2007, this was the score. In 2011, the data points to show the actual growth, And, I just my two cents, but if we're going to say growth, growth's generic. It's a generic thing. I mean, kids grow just by being in class. I mean, they're getting older, more mature. They're taking things in. What is our growth? We've had this conversation a lot that I'd like to see us start to narrow that down as to so that we really, in the end, we can say we want to win the conference championship. Well, in the end, you got to be 10-0 and win the conference. You can't be 2-8 and say you're going to win the conference championship. There's an end goal that says we've achieved this or we haven't achieved it, and it holds the coaching staff accountable for whether they're achieving it or not. So, I guess. Yeah, that was one of my thoughts.
Okay.
Oh, I only had one other thought, and this was, and I think it's more just collaboration, but there were some really good thoughts about, I think at Churchill you talked about the social thinking curriculum that you're doing there, and I think anti-bullying has to be delivered in all schools in different ways, right? But just to make sure, if we have things like that schools have discovered that, they're all going to Hadley, so it would be good to make sure if one school identifies something like this is a really great curriculum or program, that we try to see if we can tie it into other schools, so we're kind of giving those skills to everyone since they're all in the big fishbowl.
Yeah, the big Hadley bowl. So
social workers, they do all link together, so we're all doing social thinking, we're all doing the anti-bullying curriculum,
right.
And we're all doing whole body listening, so through the social workers that have their PLC, that links directly back into our building.
Mm-hmm. And one of those big pieces that you talked about, how does the overall district connect these pieces? Mm-hmm. Professional learning communities is one of those pieces through the continuous improvement team, CIT, where we've had ongoing conversations around PLCs, which has impacted our professional development team, PDT, and which is also impacting our Team 21. How do those continue to branch off, and how do we keep getting better at our professional learning communities from a district-wide? So how are we having those conversations? What does that look like? What are those expectations? What are those expectations for the building leadership teams? And then how do those expectations and that we're all working together on professional learning communities, how does that feed all the way back through? Within professional learning communities, one of the most important aspects is continuously looking at student data, that teachers and administrators, coaches are looking at student data. It's in front of, and sometimes that student data is just student work, that I'm looking at a child's piece of writing or a piece of math or science or social studies, but it's there. And we're having those conversations about instructional practices, because we know if as educators, I've got to change my instruction to be able to meet this kid's needs. If this kid or a group of kids are continuing to struggle, and really looking at those different groups, those cohorts, and how do we keep getting better. So we have that district tie-in across the board.
That was just one of my questions, is it sounds like you guys have a lot on your PLCs, and what can we do to make sure that those are strengthened, because that sounds like a key feedback loop.
That's how we're...
Right, so you answered that. My other question is you guys did a year in review, and then you're looking forward. I guess my question is, what did the board do that made this successful, and what did we do that made it not so successful for you last year, and what do we need to do next year for this to be successful? Did we get in your way last year?
Feel free to take time to think about that.
Yeah, you might want to flex
on that one. And give us that feedback. Good question.
Continued support to do what we do in the buildings to meet the needs of each child.
Okay, is there anything that you would like us to consider as a board to help this be successful for next year and 2 years? Just outside the support? Okay.
Think on it. Think, because it's a big question. It's a great question.
Yes,
it's a big one.
I'm going to follow up real quickly, and it was it kind of anecdotally we talked about this, and it's the need, and Stephanie brought this up, to make sure that there's, you know, connectedness between the buildings. And the fact that you all chose to do Rising Star because Churchill was required to do it, I think speaks to that very point, is that we're all speaking off the, you know, we're on the same song sheet. But, you know, the thing I think that was important for me is that there's that differentiation, although those key factors like social, emotional, the behavioral pieces, and the data piece too. But my question is, well, just one observation, the interactive the report card, we got to see that this weekend at the conference, and it's a great tool. I mean, I think some of us have been on it anyway, but I'm assuming that data will get loaded, and so obviously we're going to see our scattergrams and all that. So to that question.
So we have to bring that to the board, but we're waiting for PARC.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because currently you're just looking at old data.
Right.
Exactly. So you have until
cut scores and all that.
Until the state loads PARC, the report card is just kind of it's old data.
Right. But we will get that, so that will be important.
We will.
The question I had is, maybe it's a little bit like Patrick's, is what's been the greatest value for applying Rising Star? As you said, it's like 507 indicators. It appears to me it could be cumbersome. I'm sure it was overwhelming when you first started with it, and now over time you've kind of figured out the way to use it. But what has been the greatest value in applying it?
Yeah. I comparing what we did before to what we're doing now. So in the past, each team would set a goal, and maybe the goal would be to increase the number of kids in the exceed category in the ISAT test back then. Then each team would then go, each grade level team would then go back and write a goal aligned to that. But there was not always that vertical alignment between what was happening in first grade and second grade and third grade and fourth grade. And it was all based on the knowledge base of the group of teachers that were creating that goal. Whereas with the Rising Star, we now have experts in the field writing and analyzing research and data and saying, these are the things that you can do to impact kids. Mm-hmm. And so by selecting goals, like three goals, for example, where our whole school is aligned to the same three goals, and each member of the BLT is a representative to their team, really reinforcing that vertical alignment from kindergarten all the way up to grade 5, and then on to grades 6 through 8 later on. But it's really about having that knowledge base, and we know these are strategies that will work, or that work for high-performing schools.
Mm-hmm. The other thing I'd say to that is, again, there are large overarching structures that support the overall organization moving forward. So when a school, and I did this when I was a principal, when you select, and I'm just coming up with a main idea is the piece that you want to improve on. Hard part for that is not all kids need to improve in main idea. So you're making a school or even a grade level goal of that's what I'm going to improve upon. Where PLC, if you really focus in on the PLCs, you're looking at kid data. You're looking at the individual data, because there are some who need to improve on main idea, and there's some others who are already rocking and rolling, and you want to continue to grow them, but others have different needs, and that's what that PLC allows you to do, is really to think through that. Not that focusing on one or two is bad. This is just a different approach to it. So I think that's really key, because I grew up in the old system where you picked one or two strategies, and that's what you did, and that's what the whole school did, or at least a whole grade level did. So this process was new to me as well, and it makes so much sense because of all the research behind each indicator.
Jeff,
I was going to say, there's also some ownership too. I feel like when we presented it to our BLT, and then they would go back to their teams and come back to us and talk about, you know, how we would apply some of these indicators. We talk a lot about language objectives and content objectives. I feel like the indicators are almost, you know, like a legalese, or like the educational language that were the content objective. And then we have the ability, or I don't want to say the power, but we have the ownership to put it into that language objective to understand what exactly we're going to go with that indicator and how it might apply to third grade math differently than it might apply to third grade or fifth grade or level 3 literacy. Mm-hmm. Like Paul, like you said, like it provides some ownership and specification while remaining under the same indicator, because not everyone needs the same thing.
Thank you.
Sorry. Mine are just questions about terms in here. Really
okay.
Sorry.
Franklin, your third bullet says multi-tiered system of support, AKR, RTI. So is RTI changing, or it's just now getting a new name?
That's what they're doing, they're referring to.
Yeah, that's the new name.
Yeah. Make sure you get used to one
name. When you get used to one name, yeah. then they change.
We don't want you comfortable. Yeah. We want you
for
feeling
the love
like
of God.
Multi-tiered system of support.
Yeah, get rid of this and start over.
And then Churchill, goal number three, it talks about instructional coaches. Are those, do we have those? Is that like a district? I never heard instructional coaches.
Well,
is
that they're
the math coach. The
math
coach at Literacy Coast.
Okay.
To
help.
Yeah,
sorry,
thank you. No, those are good.
Well, I was just, Linda said vertical alignment, and I know what you were talking about, but it made me think. I started to think about how our kids' lives are from kindergarten to fifth grade, and then if you went to sixth grade, we go level one, two, three, and then we go to sixth grade. That part of it never made sense to me. But we have our kids, in terms of an alignment, we have our kids in K-1 being taught all subjects by one teacher. Then we go to specialization for 2-3. We go to multi-agent specialization for 4-5. So I guess the way we're delivering it, to me, just nothing seems aligned there, but that's just a personal comment on that. So.
Okay. Anything else? All right. Thank you so much. Excellent.
Great.
Really.
Thank you. You are welcome to stay, but you're also welcome.
Happy Thanksgiving.
Yeah, to have that. Not on Thanksgiving.
No, that's what I'm saying. It's just going to be.
All right, thank you for that. On to discussion items.
Yep. The 2015 proposed tax levy. We started the conversation 2 weeks ago around the posting that is out there, and now we're back to the board to have that second conversation around the tax levy. What is the board's wishes? What are their thoughts on the tax levy, and where do we want to go with it? Administration, we're recommending continuing with the levy as Becky proposed 2 weeks ago, for the simple fact of we're not sure what the state's going to be doing. During the III conference, heard from a number of different legislators, and again, there's a lot of gridlock down there, and it appears to be a lot of finger pointing. But one of the things that I heard from four different legislators was this idea of a tax freeze. So if that occurs this year, what does that mean? So Becky and I and others strongly support the continuation of the tax levy as presented by Becky 2 weeks ago. But with that, I'll hand it over to board members, Joe, and others to jump in.
Sorry, Joe, before you
go ahead.
Sorry. So, Paul, since I wasn't at the conference, what for Becky, what's the tax freeze? Did they give you more details, more information besides what Becky provided?
Basically, it's still where Becky's at. What I heard on a consistent basis was this is a big showdown between Governor Rauner and Speaker Madigan, and they're trying to figure out how do they do that. And from the representative side of the House, they're really worried that it's going to have to take some big major event. But one of those pieces that consistently are talked about, when they do talk, because that was the other piece, there's not a whole lot of talking going on between the two sides. But when there has been talk, the tax freeze continues to be an element that they discuss.
What does it mean?
Increasing
the state funding?
Go ahead.
That the property tax freeze would mean that whatever the 2015 tax extension in dollars was, not rate, but tax extension in dollars, would be the same dollars that you would get the following.
Yep.
Would not.
And that's a conversation that they would hold that for 2 years.
Right.
In the current conversation.
Right.
Again, who knows what any of that means?
All bets could be off when they actually start talking.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So in 2014, if your taxes were for the district $42,429,000, that's what would be frozen.
Right.
Including bond and interest, do you think?
No, debt service would continue to float based upon your commitment to your community
when
you sold those bonds.
how would new construction play into a tax freeze?
Well, if you passed a referendum.
No, just new construction.
The way I have heard it, it does affect them.
It does not. So if you have new construction, that adds to your EAB. Therefore, that collection of revenues would increase beyond where our 214 level was at 42.4 points.
I think that's still that's part of the discussion.
Yeah.
I don't think there's a definite answer on that.
Where would that money go? Theoretically, somebody builds a house, adds on, and their EAB goes up. Maybe it goes to the state. Who knows?
They would still assess your property.
Right.
They would still calculate the new construction. It's just that the amount would now be divided.
So everybody would get the same amount of holds. Therefore, somebody construction happening next to you
would lower your taxes. Tax.
Correct.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So you promote people over the tax rate.
And Packer, to your spreadsheet that you sent.
I was just going to ask. Hopefully, Paul's with that.
There's.
Yes.
Because at the bottom of that, you said there was a relationship between tax rate and assessed value. Tax rates tend to go up when EABs are declining.
Mm-hmm.
And if assessed value is increasing, your tax rate tends to go down. And to your question on...
It's an inverse relationship.
It's an inverse
relationship. Yeah, that's right.
Absolutely. Yeah. And then your question about what's the history of the decline in EAB, it was on that worksheet that I've given you last
week. Yeah, I apologize.
No, that's fine.
That was blind.
So that's that. And as Dr. Gordon said, we've had lots of conversations in the last 2 weeks about where we go with this.
Mm-hmm.
And I haven't moved from believing that the asking for 3.94 is the right thing to do, knowing that we will not receive all of that when all is said and done and the PTEL formula is applied to it.
Becky, can I just correct that? You have 3.49, but you're thinking we'll end up with 1.96.
96, correct.
Okay.
The unknown factors here at the local, there is a lot of unknown factors at the state level. But here at the local level, we still don't know what that final number is for new construction and or what the reassessment number is. I did contact the village, and they told me they depend on Milton Township. So I went to try to get a hold of Milton Township, and lo and behold, the day after I called him, I got an email. But his numbers are gross numbers, and what I mean by that is he's given me numbers that don't include all the exemptions. So for homestead or senior or veterans exemptions that you may be able to apply for, it doesn't include that. And he's tying it to a number that he had at this time last year, which is much higher than the reality. So I'm a little concerned about even talking about those in public. I did get some information. I just don't know the validity of it. What it did tell me is that my projections that I gave you are in the ballpark.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that a couple other things that we need to remember is that the levy that you approve in December will fund the 2016-17 school year. And we talked a little bit about the differences between our tax rate and our levy request in the high schools. And I want to remind everybody that they have a much larger tax base than we do. And when I look at the village and the types of revenue sources they have, and they're very typically villages or cities or your municipal governments ask for a very small increase in their tax levies, and that's because they have revenue sources we could only dream about. That we don't have access to, and the biggest one of those would be sales tax. I think as the economy grows in that arena, you're seeing that cities and villages have more money to operate with. And one of the things, even though I'm only going to be here 100 days, you're going to learn a lot about me and how I operate. When we do those financial projections in February, you're going to see a scenario that says, so you can see the long-term effect. So if you don't levy at the maximum rate, or if you choose to do what the state is going to do, or may do, freeze up that extension for a couple of years, so that you can see the long-term effect of the lost revenue that you may have.
Becky, when we talk about the kind of the tax freeze, you had mentioned this, and I know this has come up in years past, and that is that because we're under PTEL, and this year because it's so low, it's 0.8% for CPI. I mean, effectively we're in a freeze.
I mind you.
So how, when you look at the, when you looked at the numbers, and then I, you know, you had provided for us also the fund balance information too, which we're bound by our own board policy from 2012, which is a good thing. I'm not dismissing that. I think that was a good decision. This number that we're projecting, you know, based on what you know, which is not much, is as close to budget as possible. That's been the goal for boards, you know, for at least the last four or five years.
When we start to develop the budget, we will factor in 1.96. Mm-hmm. If it comes in slightly less than that or slightly more than that, we'll adjust it in the spring prior to final budget adoption.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay.
But it gives us a parameter for the revenue that we will have in our budget for the 16-17 school year.
Right. I was reading in the paper the other day that District 203, so Naperville, Woodridge, I'm thinking Lyle, part of Lyle, they had, they're projecting, I think it's $50 million in new construction, which, you know, gives them that bump. I mean, it's just, that number is important.
Everybody should have a Randall Road that runs.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I call it the big box.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, I just think it's important to have that on the table when we talk about this, because it's so, we, you know, sometimes it feels very finite because it's just our own kind of world here. But when you talk about sales taxes too, and I think I brought this up, but I saw also not only DuPage County is not levying for property tax, but Kane County as well. But they've both seen a significant increase in sales tax. I think DuPage County, the number was like an increase of $100.8 million in sales tax. I personally would like to talk to Dan Cronin about maybe negotiating for a percent of a percent. I mean, it's a lot of money.
It's a lot of money.
So it puts them in the position of not having to, you know, to access those other dollars.
And then the other document that I we supplied for you tonight was the fund balance history for the last 5 years.
Yep.
Based upon, it's an administrative procedure, it's not a policy,
mm-hmm.
and I would encourage
yes,
you,
thank you
sometime in the future
yes.
To put it in policy, just to solidify the board's intention. And again, because the administrative procedure calls for the accrual basis of determining this, that's why I wanted to put both documents together so that you could never have. But you can see that at the end of 14-15, we are slightly higher. We're at 27% when you take the expenses for that, those funds that are involved. So that sometime in the next month or two, we'll have to talk about how we develop a plan. To reduce that fund balance next year.
And part of that plan is to pay for the remaining
correct.
Churchill. You'll have roughly about $1 million of payment, which will bring you 24.6 something percent fund balance.
And that was my, when I got the document, I was looking at 13, 14, 12, 13, the percent of expenses to fund balance, much higher. Right. So, and then, can anybody explain to me what the big jump was between 12-13 to 13-14?
In expenditures.
Well, in the fund balance, it goes from 17 to 23.
Where are you looking, Kurt?
That's all funds.
Was that us with our getting our financing?
The capital projects is 16.
Right, you would have sold.
6.4.
Bonds, yeah, we added that.
The difference between the bonds being sold and what you spent.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty good for not being here.
Thank you.
Good job.
It tells a story.
Yeah.
Well, and the other, under the tax extension, number is when we didn't levy in 2011 for bond and interest. I remember being at that meeting and making sure that, you know, it was, the board understood it, but that the public understood it too, that because we weren't levying, that next year was going to look like it had this huge swing up, but it was because of the zero amount in bond and interest. So that's that other number that looks, you know, off.
Now, the last year that you levy for your debt service dollars is the 2016 levy for payment of the final payment in the 17-18 school year.
Isn't there 2 cents of
levy? There's two. Mm-hmm. There are two bonds there.
One's off the next year.
Right. But when you structured the debt, you understood that that one was coming off, so you backloaded the debt to keep the payments pretty even.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Did you, Becky, so the 27%, take me through what the concerns were there?
Well, you're the guide that the board has set about what the level of fund balance is, that it shouldn't be greater than 25%. And if I read the minutes correctly and the documents correctly, for when the board made the decision to do the extra addition of classrooms at Churchill, there was a conversation that talked about transferring more fund balance to the capital projects fund to make sure that we could complete those payments.
I think it was part of the approval.
It is a part of the approval. It's not just the minutes.
And we have not made that transfer yet. It was not made by June 30th. And so it's something that we have to do this year.
But it was a range, though, conditional on what the budget came in.
And the cost. Yep.
That we just heard was 1.23.
Well, we were, so I guess where I get confused is in 2010, the number's 38%. 37 in 2011, 37 in 12, 34. So if we're concerned at 27, I guess when I go back, should we have been concerned in those previous years?
I wasn't here.
There were people that were. That's why I asked the question.
I thought I wasn't here in those years until we started approving.
Mm-hmm.
The reason I understood Kurt that they didn't reserve any is because there was a facilities issue.
Right. And we were talking at the time, it was 2012, 2013 also, that board had directed the administration to look at any land in the area, and there were, and we had an assessment done by what's the word I'm looking for? An assessment of the property and
appraisal.
Thank you, of that as well. So there was a decision. There was a discussion about the board because we did talk about this, as you know, over in 2012-13. And it was for land, and then it was also looking at facilities because we were always also talking at the time about adding on to, you know, Hadley, looking at, you know, making changes. So there was this question about, you know, would we use the money? What would the fund balance be about?
And, you know, all the information is contained in the audits, which I'm not always sure is clear, mm-hmm. transparent for anybody to read the financial statement. I would suggest that whoever is sitting in that chair downstairs in this role, or sitting in this role next year, is that they maintain this and make sure it's
so
recorded.
You and I and Stephanie talked about it to be a bit more transparent. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It just, I guess for me, and as Joe pointed out, it's not a policy, it's a board, it's a philosophy.
Procedure.
Mm-hmm. If it was 25%, and I'm not sure exactly when that was adopted. But if 25% was adopted in 2008, I'm not sure what the revision was from 8, but I mean, the board's been violating its own philosophy for a number of years. So,
the 25% for me in my recent history in several districts that I've worked in, it's usually 33 1/3%. Or 120 days of cash on hand, and or 4 months worth of expenditures on average, and you measure that every year. And I found it easier to have that conversation that I said, this is the chart, this is where 120 days is, and this, you're either above it or below it, and every time you're drastically above it, you develop that plan about how you're either going to bring it down or how, because typically schools don't invest money in their facilities, so to maintain those higher fund balances makes sense to me, because the amount of work that needs to be done, that we're still talking about that needs to be done, and those excess reserves can help offset those costs.
And that could very well be a smart line of thinking, but that's not what the philosophy has been of the board, and that's where my concern comes in, is that the previous boards to this, some people here, some people not, were in violation of their own philosophy. I'm just looking at the numbers, and we're concerned about 27. I'm wondering if they were concerned about 38.5 4 years ago, or 37.1. Right. So those are to me, why even have a philosophy then, if you're not going to follow the philosophy? Mm-hmm. And you would adopt your philosophy, right? Because it's a logical way to think, right? We could adopt that. But we don't have that philosophy. We have a 25% philosophy, and we haven't followed it, which is why my concern has always been, you know, when we say, well, we're going to leave dollars on the table, well, we could say, you know, we could have a company out in America say, you know, we charge $2 for this widget, and we'd like to increase it to $2.25 because we've got a lot of pressures that, but, you know, we can't really do that because the market's not going to allow us to sell enough product at $2.25, so we're not going to, they don't really say, well, we're leaving 25 cents on the table for the future and forever and beyond. They do what the market bears. We I guess have a luxury to say we can do that because we have a guaranteed revenue source that comes in. But you know, that is my big concern here, is we have a philosophy that we're violating, and then we kind of scare ourselves to say, well, we're gonna leave dollars on the table if we don't do this. Well, I unfortunately told the superintendent this weekend, I'm almost to the point of saying, in order to actually have conversation about reducing the budget, I almost believe that we have to reduce revenue to go ahead and make people fit within the means that we have. It's unfortunate, but I just don't hear any meaningful conversation.
Well,
other
Jill, go ahead, Becky.
Clarification, the whole idea of the 27% falling to 24.8 or whatever the calculation is, was based on the plan that was put in place for the four additional classrooms that are attributed to the dollar amount in the approval. I mean, it was changed from the recommendation, I can tell you that, because it was an amendment to the, if I remember, mm-hmm. I think I brought it up. Mm-hmm. It was an amendment to the motion so that this percentage, we were keeping an eye on it, and we were following the AP, a plan would be made based on the board approval of recommendation from the superintendent and the finance committee. So at least the last part of it, mm-hmm. But I know that was a big discussion after some of the it took a while for the new finance people to get up on all this stuff after getting on the board in May, and that's what triggered a lot of what you saw, and the results mm-hmm. are out there at the with the new classrooms at mm-hmm. our K-5.
Well, and Joe, to your point about finance, our finance committee now talking about that, and Kurt's referring to, of course, these other dates, 2010, 2011, 2012. In that time period, the finance committee did look at this. I mean, they had those conversations. I mean, Drew, you served on it, and I would go to some of those meetings myself. And it was really asking the question, you know, if you look at the administrative procedure, and I think this is important, it's that looking at that time in that snapshot to say, here's what we're trying to accomplish. And so there was certainly our master facilities plan, which was started in 2009, so 10, 11, 11, and 12 for sure, and then 12, 13 was really predicated on, we're trying to do something here. And so if it's land, we're going to need, the district will need X amount of dollars. So you're right. It's definitely higher than what the procedure talks about, this fiscal philosophy. It was important to bring it out, but also important to understand the context. Because where we are now, I think, feeds that forward to decide how do we keep this down.
Right. So, yeah, so that I was going to say, to this year's levy conversation, you guys saw the Excel spreadsheet that I put out there, and I've just kind of been messing with the numbers, and anybody can do this because it's an interactive sheet. Putting the 1.96 change between an 80 basis points change is approximately $492,000 in revenue difference. Mm-hmm. So
from 80 basis points.
Yeah. Now, there's always the compounding conversation that we have, and then you have the freeze.
Mm-hmm.
But even if we go with a flat levy from last year, $831,000 difference to go from a zero basis point increase or a flat levy to a 1.96. It's like $831,000 revenue loss. So you have both scenarios out there. 80 basis points would be $339,000 loss. 1.96 basis points delta to zero is $831,000 revenue loss year over year compounded.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
But in a conversation I had also, though, that when you do those, you know, you have data, facts, and lies, right? So you can always take the revenue, compounding revenue that's lost with the expected increase in income from investments to offset those losses, too, right?
Well, so investment income right now is, if we're hitting 25 basis points,
right?
We've done a really good investment.
Right,
deal.
That's what I'm saying, though. As interest rates increase,
we should
potentially see, but there's that other side of the income stream that you're possibly going to get to offset some of the compounding that you're going to lose on the back end. So, you know, as you forecast this out, we also have to keep them. So, the reason why I sent the spreadsheet to the board, to Paul, and Paul sent it to the board, was to show what I think is a relatively small incremental difference in levy taxation if we just go with a flat zero basis points and a loss of $339,000 this year in revenue, with the consequence of that being compounded annually.
Mm-hmm.
I appreciate that, and I understand
with the hedge that interest rates increasing and the compounding is going to be made up in the fund balance.
Interest income.
Well, we could still have some construction.
Right.
But if we don't ask for it, we won't get it.
Yep.
Which is why I typically ask for more than I anticipate getting, because, if we even ask for 0.5% or just ask for the 8.8% mm-hmm. in the levy, if your new construction would give you a greater value, you're not going to receive it because you didn't ask.
So the new construction,
they're tied together.
By doing that, the new construction, once again, so it's back to the freeze statement, would lower everyone's tax bill.
Right.
So if you have a lot more new construction in the freeze request, everyone's tax bill would be lower. What is, and I understand that. It's great. Your neighbor bills and you get a lower tax bill. It makes sense. Have we looked at the TIF impact? We have two TIFs that have been approved, and those EAVs are held constant.
Correct.
As part of the TIF.
And how about downtown?
Downtown, and then there's a few parcels in the latest TIF.
Mm-hmm.
Most of them were, because it's along Roosevelt Road.
Most of them were 89s.
89s.
And ours, but there's a couple, like the apartments were taken out.
Those were TIFed.
Right, yeah. They were supposed to be originally in the
mm-hmm.
But there are a couple along there. Have we looked at the analysis of that? Because, I mean, that's one thing where, you know, EAV assessments are, you know, every year, just so people out there don't have a spreadsheet, but every year EAV has gone lower since 2009, and that's the beginning of the chart, so it could have been before that.
It probably started to decline because the assessed value is based upon a 3-year rolling average of the market value, and that was right after the 2008 downturn in the economy.
Mm-hmm.
And so it took a couple of years for the decline in our assessed value to catch up with the decline in, if you were selling your home in 2008,
but
the decline in that market.
But 9 ZAD was made in 10.
Yeah.
So actual.
Right.
And the fall market was in 8. So it didn't take that long to catch up to this because you're only 2 years out as opposed to
I'm not sure when the TIFs were started, but typically TIFs are extended for a 23-year period. Mm-hmm. And the assessed value is frozen at the level that it was the year the TIF took effect. And you see none of the increase in that value until the TIF is retired in 23 years, or if they determine sometime in the interim to call the TIF early.
They could extend it, too.
That takes state approval
right.
to do that.
But they're doing that
More often than not. There was an ongoing conversation before I left Park Ridge, and the village of Park Ridge decided, after long negotiations, not to ask for the extension.
I think the downtown TIF was approved in 12, so you're probably using 11 to do
that. Yeah, I think it was the first year that our new village manager came in.
The last
10 years, so count 23 years from there.
No, I understand that.
Yeah, and all the growth that
what it comes down to is the number, right? Yeah, the TIF, you're extending the TIF impact. Any growth will not be seen by the school district. We're going to the TIF fund, will be used under TIF statutes by state. There are spending limitations. If you go outside those spending limitations, then they have to come to the taxing district
and
ask for permission. That's usually the negotiation. But we have a number of parcels that this impacts, and what it does is it brings down the total EAD because there is no increase in that EAD. So my question is how many parcels, and we should do the analysis ultimately to know that it's 10% of our EAD. That's what I would look for. Or is it 2%? Is it a nominal amount?
Because you're trying to figure out.
You're never going to get the tax increase from that. That's always.
Yeah, but you're trying to figure out how big of an impact that has on the total NOB to determine if it's a needle mover to the conversation.
Well, we weren't on the board at that time, so I didn't have that data until.
Because if it's 50%
the impact
EAD,
of the TIF?
Yeah. It's not. But your commercial.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. The commercial property is usually.
So our what
I have
what?
A couple questions.
Okay.
Mine are going to go like way back to like more since.
I thought we're going back in time.
Wow. Be like,
go right ahead.
Me down, Stephanie. Okay. Just I want to try to understand the fund balance a little bit, and I was wondering, will we make this available online for everyone here since we're talking about it, so they kind of have an idea what we're talking about?
We can do that. I'll tie it to today's.
To the packet.
Yeah.
Okay, so my question is, first of all, I go over the order. Churchill's, the last phase of the Churchill construction, we said that money is going to come out of our funds, so actually our fund balance is going to drop.
Right.
But is that money allocated in capital projects?
Yes, there is.
That actually doesn't affect the fund balance, so we would still be at 27% even after.
So we
have to transfer money.
We still have to
from
transfer
one of those funds.
That's the.
Okay.
So we do have some funds in our capital projects for this, but not this last $1 million, roughly.
Now, my next question: why are capital projects not in the funds to be used to calculate the fund balance?
I will tell you that it didn't surprise me when I read the procedure because I've never included capital projects because those funds are restricted.
Okay.
And you're typically either transferring them in from another fund or you've sold bonds or debt certificates to fund it.
Okay. So I guess what's concerning to me about this is if I look at the capital projects over time, it's like $25,000, $35,000, $68,000. Then you get to 2013-14, and it jumps up to $6 million, $6.5 million, which is a lot. And I feel like, that was to do the additions on the schools. And maybe that's how that money should be allocated. Mm-hmm. Maybe that's the bucket it's supposed to go into. But I feel like, in presenting information to the taxpayer and showing how much money we have and what our fund balance is, I feel like that $6.5 million, or that money used for the addition, it wasn't like in my mind, that wasn't really, I don't see it the same as our other capital projects. And if you were to put that money in with the funds to be used to calculate our fund balance percentage, our, we would have actually been carrying a 46%.
But those were borrowed funds.
Yeah.
Not all of it. We didn't
borrow. Bob would come to the board and move the other money over. Right. When we had
but to. We needed.
And we're still going to have to do one more move for the last project that is happening.
But so at some point, how I'm trying to understand how where we needed like $15 million.
So he said $12 million.
Or $12 million, but we only borrowed
$7 million. That wasn't soft cost though. That was his hard construction cost. Remember when Bob was giving his presentation, it was the second page that was soft cost.
But where did where's the other $5 million tied? Where is
we
that?
We made it. Right. And he moved it over, and then the contractors were paid.
Right. Yep. But what bucket did that fall into? That $5 million is what I'm asking.
In the capital. Project.
Capital projects.
Right. Which
and
I guess
moved
is
it
my
from someone. That's your question.
That yeah. My concern is that I feel like this. It's like kind of we're shifting the money around, and I feel like that money for that big project, in my mind, goes towards our fund. Maybe that's just me. That's
probably,
just my opinion. But
gonna,
just
looking at the chart, it's probably operations and maintenance. If you look at that balance,
right.
Go from $4 million down.
Mm-hmm.
And operations and maintenance is usually for facilities. And you see where it starts at $4 million, and that boom, that counts towards fund balance. You see how that's slowly going down, $4 million, $3 million, $2 million, to $820,000. So if we go back and check the records when we made the approvals for the transfers that Bob presented,
mm-hmm.
I would think that that's what you're finding, just based on
but
what's in front of us.
It wasn't done. I mean, I guess
well,
it's just...
Is your concern is that it shows...
Maybe this is my lame and I don't totally... I'm just
no, I think it's a fair question.
It just seems like we were carrying a lot of money and the buckets that we put it in make it look like, oh, we didn't have that much over our percent over the fund balance we would like to carry, but we really were. That's, I guess, in simplest terms how I'm looking at it. But and I'm trying to really understand, like, how much are we really carrying now?
But if you're suggesting that the money in there looks like we were, like, holding it, I mean, I would go back to Becky to say, to ask her, which I think was your original question, that $6.5 million in 2013-14 under capital projects, that's the fund that... We had to use in order to hold those dollars by school code. Right.
By school code, we have to spend the money for the projects out of the capital projects fund. So if you have no money, if you start and you have, let's say, for clarity, simplicity, it was zero, and you've approved contracts in $12 million. So you loan, make a permanent transfer. There was $4.3 million out of the operation and maintenance fund and $2.7 million out of the fund, and then you sold debt certificates to supplement that.
So we're following school code.
Yes, we are.
That's exactly, and that's what Bob talked about last year and the previous 2 years.
And something really important to remember about this is a snapshot in time.
It's a snapshot on June 30th.
June 30th. So what happens is you have June 30th here, June 30th here, and in that particular year there was a lot of activity that happened. Because we borrowed money and moved money, and it's just the picture at the end. So it's not all the transactions that happen.
Mm-hmm.
Right
now. Yeah.
That sounds
like an accountant telling me. I know. It is, and I promise it's the last time I'll hear.
Are there any other specific questions?
My other comment I was going to make that, yep. You know, Patrick was talking about his spreadsheet here.
Which
and
one?
His.
His spreadsheet.
His spreadsheet.
His. No.
That's Becky.
Oh, that was Becky's.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Sorry.
This is
it
a
like
levy.
They all look alike. Come on, you're kidding me. They all look alike. Spreadsheets are spreadsheets.
But talking about, you know, looking at the anticipated levy of 1.9 per 6, and if we don't increase the levy at all, and it's 800,000, what we were talking about, that we'd be losing. But I mean, just to look at that in a different term, hold on, I had my calculator just messed up, but really, we talked about, I know in our goals for Paul, we've talked about reducing our budget, and if we're actually going to, if we want to reduce our budget, say, 3%, just throw that number out there, that's actually like $1.2 million, so, you know, to look at the $800,000, if you look at it in that terms, if we're trying to reduce our budget.
I think reducing your budget on the contractual amount is a dangerous thing, but reducing the budget on the call of the $14 million, the differential of the contractual amounts to the total budget is probably what we talked about looking at.
I'm just saying of our budget.
It's a dangerous thing to do to throw a percentage on the whole budget when you have 36 million.
There's a bunch of it that's fixed.
To go up.
I think that's one of my bigger concerns.
And then so you adjust the $14 million number, that is more spendable, if you will. That is variable.
Yes.
Okay. Just for clarity.
Go.
I'm not sure. See if I grasp this right. To say to cut 3% off a $52 million budget, we can't. You can say that, but you have to be careful because there are certain contracts asking, and all those other ones that say it is going to increase. So what you have to carve out that amount of dollars of the $53 million and say what's left of the pie.
And that's no longer
3%.
It's about 11.2.
Right.
Mm-hmm. It's about 11.2.
So you've got to cut 11.2 of...
the part that you can cut.
Mm-hmm. Buying a snowblower. 11.2 of... Mm-hmm. You know...
How do you
snowblower? 11.2 of... Yeah.
You had your chance, Dave. You could have snuck out. Right. Could have snuck out.
Still, you go back to my point that I said to begin with. Unless you start to have that conversation... I'm not sure that we have the gumption as an entire group to make any cuts. So I think the only way that you're going to get anything is to reduce revenue and force staff into making the necessary cuts and look creatively at how to do that. So you can talk about however you want to, but and it can be your point, Erica. But again, I've not heard any concrete evidence to it. But at least some of us have actually come out with some ideas on how to start to do that.
My point was, is that to me this whole thing leads back to what we talked about earlier tonight in finance, which was this is a discussion about the budget as a whole. So Drew, you wanted to say something?
I want to get some clarification.
Can you speak up just a little bit to make sure you
In terms of the fund balance and where that came from, when I was on the finance committee back then, and there was a lot of discussion about what we were doing and what we should be doing with fund balances. The original document, the original policy or procedure was that it established. Just minimum.
This discussion
is a 25% as a minimum.
Mm-hmm.
That led the finance committee to have a discussion, which resulted in the 11-12 abatement. Later in 12, we redefined what that number should be, and we're trying to hit a number closer to 25. Understand, Turk, that it was originally 25% was the minimum. So we were trying to work that number down. The food balances 12 and 15 was driven by the concept of purchasing land. Win, lose, or draw. And that was the concept, and that's why that number was a little higher. And that finally resulted in the addition of the schools. Mm-hmm. So, but you need to, when the policy was rewritten in 12, that's why. There were higher numbers, so it was a different way to look at it. Looked in 11, and it was written in 12 to try and hit more of a meaningful number as opposed to 25% or more.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks, Stuart.
The other question I had, and I guess it's just an incremental thing, you know, and if I look at the
levy worksheet.
The worksheet is that, you know, we're looking at our anticipated number is 2%, and we're going to ask for 3.4%, and which in itself doesn't seem like a big number unless you figure out what's the percentage change, which is roughly 70%. And I guess maybe those numbers aren't that significant, but you know, it seems like we're asking for 70% more than we think we're going to get. And I do think there's some merit in Patrick's spreadsheet. I looked at that earlier today. I don't know how to segregate out the if you wanted to capture the new construction and not increase the other component of that. So I think that was an interesting concept.
Yeah. So my idea on that was since Becky didn't capture new construction in her EAB analysis, I didn't include it in the EAB calculations of 80 basis points and 0 basis points. But at the bottom of the spreadsheet, I did calculate what the new construction would have to come in at to make up the difference between 80 basis points and 0 basis points. And that number is 9.2 million of new construction to come in.
Which I think that's... Obviously, we don't have the number from the assessor, but if you look at the numbers historically, yeah, you know, it was 13 million.
So it goes to the point that I'm trying to prove. The point that I'm trying to illustrate. The point I'm trying to illustrate is that delta in dollars of lost revenue of $339,000 will probably get made up with the new construction cost because we're not calculated in the EAB at the top.
But to do that, you need to levy the differential of your two numbers.
Right.
Because what you have working here is two
numbers.
And I'm with you here. In a perfect world, you'll say, let's not levy, and I'm with you, 100%, let's not levy the existing taxpayers outside the new construction number.
Right.
Keep them net zero. Yet, allow new construction to come in and tax it at the existing rate so that you can have that revenue increase. If it's 9 million, it's a wash.
Right.
So,
right.
But it's not the way the process works.
You can't break them apart.
But what you can do is do Patrick's spreadsheet and make your best guess and say, okay, this is what we're willing to do. We look at historic numbers of new construction because we've asked Becky, Kurt asked Becky to go back to the village. The village punted back to
Milton
gave kind of more of a puzzle than you had before. But you use historic numbers. I mean, just use historic numbers. Use the average over the last three. It's probably actually a little less than 9 million, but it's about 8 million. So if you plug that in, and you say, this is what we want. We want to get credit for the 8 million of new construction. So instead of going for this increase, we're going to net, all we want is that. And we know what that is. It's an increase of, you know, 322,000, whatever it is. So that's what we levy for. We add the 322,000, what we did last year, and that's our increase. If we're right, all those other people, instead of getting a reduction in the tax bill because of their neighbor's bill, they're going to get a zero.
Mm-hmm.
Now, so that I'm following you. I like the idea. It's
so, what's your question?
But I still want to look at, before next meeting, the impact of that TIF downtown that's being held. You know, when a new project comes in, we already learned what happened. If the new project that's proposed on the north side of the tracks with the grocery store, 252 units, we'll get our, whatever it is, $1,500 a unit of an impact fee per bedroom. That's only three bedrooms. We'll get that. But we're not going to, for the next 20-some years, we're not going to get the increases in taxes. And that has an impact on our budget.
You have to factor that new construction out of the new construction.
So what we have to see is how many, what does that make up of our EAB? Is it 2%? Then it's nominal. Is it 40%? It's probably somewhere in the middle.
But you didn't have it.
No, the TIF.
I
understand it, but it's not increasing. Even if your bill would go up $100 with no development, we don't get the $100. It goes into the TIF fund. Even without the development, tax bills usually go up, but that money goes into the TIF fund.
Right.
So it doesn't matter if there's development or not. Now, big TIFs, I mean, there aren't about. I understand TIFs. I think they're great.
For the right reasons,
There's, I just looked at the village's webpage. There's a whole section on
it. Yeah, I'm trying to do that.
Okay. Well,
can I make a suggestion, Joe? Because I think we've all taken a bunch of notes, and we have now until the 14th of December, and it sounds like there's probably two key pieces here. It's does Patrick's spreadsheet make some sense, and if so, what are some of the risks involved in following this line of thinking? And is that the right word? Make some sense, Patrick? Sorry.
No.
What you worked on.
Does Patrick's number.
Your numbers make sense.
Right. Yeah. Does the spreadsheet make sense?
Holes in it because this is a big decision.
I think that's
right. And I want to turn this over to Becky because what I want to say is as we wrap this, because there's obviously more conversation, but if you have other questions, more detail, send it to Paul, and then he'll make sure that it gets out to all of us in the context of the questions, so that we'll all be seeing the same thing. Becky?
I want to remind everybody, we levy dollars. The EAB number is there for informational purposes only. Got nothing to do with the dollars that we ask for, or what we may end up getting. When the county finalizes these numbers in the spring, that's when it becomes meaningful. But right now, they're just numbers, and we levy dollars. We do not levy a rate.
Mm-hmm. Right.
That's the purpose of the second spreadsheet, to show the tax bills on the houses.
Well, Joe, what I want to ask is if that's the question, then send it to Paul so that then Becky can run those numbers. Okay. And can tell us, Joe, this makes sense, or Joe, you can't do this. Right? I mean, that's we defer to you, your expertise.
And for me, the TIF thing, understanding that percentage,
let's wrap.
There's no reason to do projections until you understand that, because that...
Yep.
That's a piece of it, right, yeah. Especially because that's in play. You're right. Mm-hmm. So is that fair to be able to do that? And sooner than later, as you think about this over the next few days.
If you get the new construction from the assessor, which he should be really close to finishing.
He's not.
That's what she said.
As he compares it to what he gave a year ago, there's no correlation. I have to go back and track some 10 years of history of what it was at this time of year and what it ended up being, because he's millions of dollars off from where we were last.
So you don't think he's going to have any idea?
Not by December 14th.
Not until the spring, because he's applied. When he submits his numbers to the county clerk's office for the development of the extension in the spring, then the county starts applying all the exemptions. And his numbers don't include any of that. And that's why his numbers are so high.
Okay. Yeah. So he couldn't give you
timing. No.
They won't.
He won't commit. So questions to Paul. He'll frame those to Becky as appropriate, and then you can get that back to us. So, again, sooner than later.
I just have one clarifying question. Yep. Based on the GIA contract, even though we haven't set our budget, and we won't do it until the spring, another reason why I think it would be better than our budget before we're doing all this, but based on the GIA contract, and since we know CPI, do we know that what the teachers are...
All those increases.
According to this, it's 0.8 times CPI, which is 0.8 plus 1.5%. Right. So we know So 2.41 is what we're looking at.
Correct.
For all their salaries. So we'll get you the increase for next year, because that's the other factor. I mean, you freeze everything, and then you have increase of salaries.
And we know that for ESPE too, because ESPE is on the same.
Well, the other thing is
similar. Anyways.
As much as
you guys tried to get it right in terms, if we did what Becky says, we're going to get 1.96, and you're going to pay out 2.41. So you're still behind the eight ball.
There'll be some retirement savings.
Yeah, we have.
There'll be some number of retirements. Because of people leaving, and
And we know the retirements because they're required to notify. Is it 2 years before retirement? What's the? I'm sorry, Laura. Thank you.
Oh, lock power. They can notify up until 5 years.
Yeah. That's right. It's a longer look back.
We don't work back with 13 teacher retirements this year, and I think it's the increase comes up to 2.14.
Yep. Yeah. Or did I say 4.1? Sorry.
Yes, 2.14. Okay. So.
So, Laura, you're saying the increase for next year?
Is what you're
anticipating.
2.14, sorry. 2.14.
Okay, I just want to...
2.14.
Just so everybody's on the same page.
But that's based on the current salaries.
Correct.
It's just doing the calculations.
Yeah.
Thank you, Lori.
Charles, I mean, you're going to have
good
health
question.
Insurance.
Yeah.
I mean, you can look at it and say, well, we've got some health insurance increases and that kind of stuff, too, that probably is going to offset some of that. Mm-hmm.
I think we really need to look at our budget. I mean, if you look at the teacher contract for the past 2 years, their increases to their salary were well above what we got in the levy. Like last year was 3%, we got 2.7. The year before that was 3.8%, and we only received 2.4 via the levy. So,
and that was due to CPI being high.
So, mm-hmm. No, those were the numbers. Well,
right, yeah, but that was factored in. CPI was factored in there, yeah.
So we'll get you all.
Your CPI wasn't factored in. CPI didn't come into factor until.
No, I made that mistake, but Lori corrected me on that.
It did come into play on that. The numbers that you see in the contract were basically applying the formula, and we knew what the CPI was, so right. It was easier to just put the end result instead of the full calculation.
Right. I made the same mistake, but yeah, that's accurate. All right. So,
What other data do you need from us? We're getting
Email to Paul.
We're getting the TIF impact.
Yep. And I will talk to Becky offline.
Okay. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. We'll see you on December 14th on that one.
All right. Mm-hmm. Thank you, Becky. Thank you. Thanks, everyone. Good conversation.
Consent.
All right, action items. Are there any items board members would like to be removed from the consent agenda to be considered separately? Hearing none, may I have a motion to approve the consent agenda, which includes item A, item 1, personnel report, employment recommendations, item 2, finance, facilities, and operations, treasurer's report, investment schedule, monthly revenue, expenditure summary report, summary of bills and payroll, vandalism report, disposal of surplus property, the 2015-16 FOIA report, 2015 report on shared services or outsourcing, school district payment order, November 5, 2015 through November 17, 2015, and item 3, other matters, approval of board meeting minutes, November 2, 2015, the special meeting on our long-range plan, and November 9, 2015, regular board meeting.
Motion.
Second.
Roll call.
Mr. Escalante?
Yes.
Mr. Ellis?
Yes.
Mr. Bochinski?
Yes.
Mr. Buckles?
Yes.
Mrs. Clark?
Yes.
Mr. Elger?
Yes.
Yes. All right, superintendent recommendations. The 2016-17 capital projects. May I have a motion to approve the administration's recommendation for 2016-17 capital projects as presented? Should we...
You still have a quorum.
We can do a motion.
May I have a motion?
A motion. Oh, you got it?
I got it. Mr. Elger, second. Discussion. We clarified what was on that in the Finance Committee meeting, right? What was pulled out, the change to the cubbies and other pieces.
Have all those conversations.
Okay.
I missed the cubby conversation. I'm assuming that's not a done conversation. So.
No, cubbies are pulled out.
Right.
But yeah, you'll come to the full board.
The locker upgrades are pulled out of this, but cubbies are
on the horizon.
A separate issue. I did have a question. Okay, so the one thing that for the capital improvement project, looking at the changes to Ben Franklin, the ADA playground upgrade, and the bathroom project, like those are projects that need to happen, like they have to happen. So what I'm going to say is not because I don't think they need, they absolutely need to occur. But I'm going to restate it again, for bringing kids back to the district, we should be prepared ahead of time, and before bringing them back, we should have done these things before we brought them back, because I feel like we should put unnecessary stress on our staff, on our students. But what I would like to know, because we are spending a lot of money now after the fact, but have we gathered any feedback from staff at Franklin to be sure that the plan that we've put together is the right one? Do we need to, maybe the plan needs to be changed, maybe it's going to cost more money. I'm just wondering, I just want to make sure, since I feel like we're already behind on this one, that we've got a good plan in place and we've gotten some feedback from the staff who's using the facilities this year to ensure that we're incorporating everything that we need to into the plan for these projects.
So Bill, really good about both projects, the bathroom upgrade. Making it into an ADA accessible is an appropriate expenditure of funds to ensure that we have that type of restroom within that classroom that will house students who would need that facility.
And we've made sure that that's the only spot in the building that it can be done.
Continue to look at different spots. That. Yeah, I feel very good about that spot.
Because I know there were some issues with the kindergarten rooms and things like that at Franklin. And if we may, I guess if we've gotten input from the staff on the plans that we have for the playground and the bathroom, that they're going to meet all the requirements that we're lacking right now. We actually gotten input from the people.
So the requirements for the bathroom are is to ensure that they're ADA. That's not a staff. Piece.
Right, I know. I'm not questioning making it ADA accessible, but what are there other things that they're lacking this year that they could use in a bathroom that we don't have that aren't necessarily making it, bringing it up to ADA compliant, but are there other things that are lacking? Should we
had several conversations with Michelle, so she, I think, is on board with everything that she's seen so far. Mm-hmm. She's in contact with the staff.
So I just want to make sure that we're, like I said, I feel like we're behind on this and put unnecessary stress on things, and I want to make sure we do it and do it right. The people that are, make sure that we're getting input from the people that are seeing what's happening.
Okay.
All right. Anything else? All right. Roll call, please.
Mr. Ellis?
Yes.
Mrs. Clark?
Yes.
Mr. Alger?
Yes.
Mr. Escalante?
Yes.
Mr. Buckel?
Yes.
Mr. Bochinski?
Yes.
Mrs. Nelson?
Yes. Okay, second is the amended class size targets for 2015-16. Let me read this, and then I know you have to say something. May I have a motion to approve the administration's recommendation for amendment to the 2015-16 class size targets as presented? May I have a motion?
Motion.
Second.
Thank you.
Okay, so I need to amend the amended.
Yes.
So on this is only for, this amended one is for this current school year.
This is the, just to clarify, the November 23rd, today's board report that we have.
Right.
So it should not have the dual language piece on there. That is for this year. That the only thing we're amending is the kindergarten AM, PM to average AM students at both sections in PM sections. That's the only thing. It is my error. We should not have that fifth bullet to it. That's on next year's.
In the first section.
Yeah, that's in the next year's work. So this should not have that bullet there.
Okay.
Because this is amending the kindergarten. That was the only intent, was to amend the kindergarten piece.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Do we not have maximums for dual language?
We do, but that's going to be for next year. I'm just saying we're not, that's not for this year.
So are you asking, do we have them for this
year? Right, like if they exist,
yeah.
Should it be clarified?
They should, but that wasn't the board discussion. I just feel like the board discussion was kindergarten AM, ensure that we have an average in PM. So there was no discussion on this other piece for this amendment, and that's my fault. So this fifth bullet should not be there. It should just be about kindergarten AM average, kindergarten PM average. Does that make sense?
It does, but we did talk it, ironically, at finance about the, I mean, I almost wonder if we're amending this, if we just amend, because, you know, 22 students maximum, and I don't know if Stephanie was here yet, it's not really a max. There's not really a max. The maximum is really 26.
Right. Right? So we talk about a range. So what I'd rather do is go back and ensure that we have the right language, because doing that amendment in the moment, I'm not comfortable. So what I guarantee, what I ask the finance committee is that we bring that piece back. To, I think we're at the full board for the next one.
But the goal is for the 2015-2016, this was always your goal, was only for to make the change to what we approved last year.
Right.
November 14th.
Yeah.
24. For the kindergarten change. Mm-hmm. So that,
that was the only one. So that is all my fault. I just didn't want to confuse the two because our conversation was really about the kinders.
But just for clarification, next year, 2016-17, there will be that fifth bullet. You're going to do more research on it.
Correct.
And then bring it back to us for next year's.
Correct. Okay. This is this current year.
Okay. So we do have, like, class size targets for kind of following for dual language. It was almost kind of like an oversight that it wasn't.
I don't know if it's an over.
But for next year, we'll...
For next year, that's a piece that we're going to add, but we had a good conversation in Finance Committee about what does that look like. Mm-hmm. One of the pieces was really putting that range in there, the 22 to 26, because it's really not a maximum of 22, because we do recognize kids do move in.
And it's a required
program. And it's a required program, and that's there. So that's mine. Okay. But I would rather it just be the amended piece. We would remove that fifth bullet. And the other language would remain the same.
Okay. The second bullet under the second, we have a practice of reviewing the targets. Should the second bullet say class sizes across grades 1 through 8? Because then kindergarten is the third bullet there.
Are you saying under the amended class size targets are as follows? Is that what you're reading?
Class sizes across a grade level rise to at least, is that what you're saying?
Right.
Yeah. So under we...
Oh, the second bullet. I'm sorry. Thank you.
The second bullet under... we also have a practice of reviewing the target. The second bullet says class sizes across a grade level rise to at least an average of 2 students above the grade level target. But then below, we specify for AM... We break out AM and kindergarten and kind of repeat it. So I'm wondering if that second bullet should really say across grades 1 through 8. Does that make sense?
You're already breaking out kindergarten.
Because you broke out kindergarten in the bullet below it.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Mm-hmm. Just for clarity.
Right. Just
for So class size across a grade, across grade levels 1 through 8.
Right.
Grade levels 1 through 8. Nancy, you good?
Just to clarify, we're removing the 22 students maximum from dual language from this recommendation and adding the language of grades 1 through 8 on the second bullet. Class sizes across the grade level, grades 1 through 8.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to fix the title, too, as well, because it says 2016-17. Doesn't that need to be fixed? The title at the very top, class size targets for 2016-17.
It says 15.
Just on the amended one.
On the amended one, yeah. It's 15.
That's the one.
No, I don't have the amended one.
Okay. Yeah. But that one's okay, but everything else is going to be changed. Are we okay with that?
Right. So we need a motion to amend.
Right.
I'll make the motion to amend the motion.
Second. You second? Okay.
So should I read what I think it is?
I think we're good.
I think we're
you
good.
You got it? Okay, good.
So if you want to discuss it further, you can.
All right. Any other discussion?
Okay. I'm trying to follow this. You're on section B2, amended class size targets 15-16 of the agenda, right?
Correct.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so we talked about the board report and all the bullet points, but we're also talking about a half a day that Ben Franklin and possibly Lincoln at the same time as this recommendation.
Yeah, this recommendation is a financial recommendation.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And this goes to conversations we had.
Yep.
So you're in the discussion phase of the recommendation, so you could do that, or you can go?
We're good to go. Roll call.
Mr. Barczynski.
Yes.
Mr. Ellis.
Yes.
Mrs. Clark.
Yes.
Mr. Escalante.
Yes.
Mr. Buckles.
Yes.
Mr. Elger.
Yes.
Mrs. Nelson.
Yes. So we're good with that one, with the amended motion. Okay, great. Item 10, board reports. Any reports from board members?
I'll do a quick one.
Okay.
I got two. So most of you guys are at the finance committee, so we know that I need to go over that, but we did talk about class sizes for 16, 17, which includes the new one that will be added, that we just talked about. There was capital projects about the cubbies, adding cubbies as opposed to refurbishing the lockers. Made a recommendation. It's $38,000 more than we were projecting for the replacement of lockers, but given wear and tear and maintenance and all that and safety, they made a recommendation based on that, and that'll be at the board for us to talk about on the 14th and then approve on the 11th if appropriate. We had a lot of discussion about student fees. We're all over the board, but we agreed to bring that to the board. And then the same with TRS. And I think everybody was there for the TRS discussion. I also was at the Ben Franklin PTA meeting on November 12th. There was three presentations given at the beginning of the meeting. It was really nice. They had a PBL about Ben Franklin leaders. It was a level 3. It was a very good PBL about what they're doing in school about leadership. It was 4th and 5th graders combined, and it was really nice. And then there were some questions afterwards. The second presentation was from was about their math. We went over the math website and a lot of good questions from the parents, getting their first understanding of reflex math and all the other things that are used and how user friendly the website was. But their parents were there; they were asking questions and getting more informed, and that's what we did at the PTA. It was really good. And then after that, Kirk did a presentation on math results and then had some sample math tests. And I'm glad the kids are taking it and they're not taking it. Because they were all, you know, some of the math ones were really easy, but they were, the other ones were tough. But it was really nice. The three presentations at the beginning covering PBLs and then math and then the data that we all asked for and like to see and showed it at the building level.
Great. Thank you, John. Others? Dean?
Sure. I attended the III conference with, I think, a lot of other people here. Attended two workshops that I'll turn into you, Nancy, for the leadership stuff. One was the superintendent evaluation, and the other is using data to make decisions. And then I attended a lot of other sessions where they were all good.
Yeah, good. So, other reports?
I attended the PEP meeting the foundation did approve the request for the grants for that's it for Hadley. We have also had a discussion on the annual reach out for funding. I did go to one of the sessions that I went to at the III conference. It was kind of interesting about school district in west of Champaign that, as opposed to doing a referendum, did a sales tax increase. So it was so they were going to send me some of the information on it, but it was very interesting.
Was that a roundtable?
It was just a presentation. But it, like I say, it was an interesting concept, which is, you know, a different funding mechanism as opposed to the typical referendum.
Yeah.
Stephanie and I kind of Saturday had our had everything kind of mapped out as we got there, and we ended up running into the Bensonville superintendent, who actually lives around the corner from me. And we ended up missing the first session because we got engaged in a conversation with him that we actually thought maybe he was telling us more than what we could learn in the session we were going to go to. But he did mention to us, and he invited Stephanie and I and any other board member to participate in Bensonville in their instructional rounds, which is part of their improvement process. And Stephanie and I were going to go in December. He also has some in January. So if anybody's interested in that or learning more about it, he said that anybody's welcome and to come to his district and spend a few hours. And you can contact one of us, and we can get you in touch with him. But you'll see Jim walking down Main Street every morning in about 60 bucks by your house every morning holding a bagel.
That's what he does. Good, thank you for that. Excellent. First, I want to thank all the board members who were able to either take a day off from work on Friday for pre-conference sessions or spend part of their weekend. Drew, Dean, Stephanie, Kurt, myself, and then also Paul and Lori Campbell, and also Nancy Moak were able to attend as well. Erica was down there for part of the weekend, and then we sent her home because she wasn't feeling well, so I wish she could have stayed. The pre-conference for me was a Friday session. That's for board presidents to focus on professional development for boards, meeting formats, FOIA. They had one of the attorneys, Brian Crowley from Franzic, actually go over the board policies again around OMA and FOIA and all that, and he always does a great job on that. So, again, my takeaway was something I said earlier today, which is all communication, electronic, texting, anything, is in between us, staff members, et cetera, is really all under FOIA. So it just was good to have that reinforced and talk to other folks, other board members about that. I went to a roundtable session, and I've shared this information with Becky, and I forwarded to Joe, actually, too, and gave it to Paul. And it was a session on using a reducing a process, a refinance process, essentially, for bonds, and to do that internally, so not use a third party. And you increase, depending on how long, as Becky explained it to me too, if you've got bonds out for another 4 or 5 years, it makes some sense to refinance and refund them, is the term. But I think it's information good to kind of keep in our back pocket because what it does is it takes out the third party. You can set the interest rate. They're callable. I mean, there's all these pieces to it that have, you know, the pluses. And it was just a really interesting conversation. It was Monticello, Community Unit School District 25, and the superintendent was there, and then there the parties that they worked with to do that. So, again, just good to go and get other perspectives. The last one I want to highlight is from Deerfield District 109, which was an upgrade to their science labs in the junior high. And they had these, you know, traditional four box with built-in furnishings. But the gas didn't work, the water didn't work. I mean, it was really in need of upgrade. And what they did was align it all to next generation science standards, where they literally, you know, kind of broke open the space, and now it's this usable kind of space. Sixth graders one side, seventh graders on others as needed. But they have also embedded every part of that room is used for learning. So on the floor, they layered large size graphing paper. They had an atom on one other side where you could actually see it. They had the planets by size. So every part of this and with technology was usable to students for learning. So it was just fascinating to look at it and the interviews they had. The other thing I want to pass out, because there were extra copies of this, so I thought I'd take one, but we just had the presentation from Katie McCluskey and her team on early learning, and so this was a workshop that I went to for the state of Illinois, Early Learning User's Guide, which supports everything that we had in that presentation the other day. It was just excellent, so I thought that that was really interesting. Last two things quickly. I had a chance to go over to a District 87 Glenbard committee meeting for communication, legislation, and partnerships around the Lend Action Network. But what I took out was also some information that they shared about the qualified school construction bonds. And that, in fact, if you saw in the newspaper, they have been moved out of the governor's office and now back to ISBE. So it's just under $500 million that are available. They're taking applications between December 1st and January 15th. Of course, you have to have either a referendum passed or shovel ready or whatever. But I shared this with Paul to have to keep on file, because depending on who accesses those funds, it may be that there, who knows, might be some left over. I doubt it. because I think, as they said, there were $8 billion in capital projects in building across the state for school districts. So that's how much, you know, the need is. But District 87 is going to be applying for, I think, $25 million, hoping to get maybe $15 million, which will reduce their you know, interest to taxpayers. So this is the kind of thing to keep our eye on. We have to keep, you know, that sense of urgency around this, because, you know, these things come and they go. So we need to, again, keep our view external, too. Last thing was also a problem-based learning project that I think we all got a survey to do from the ELL classroom in Hadley, Katie Lures, Ms. Lures' classroom. So I was able to have two sets of panels come with me. This is a kind of a prototype of a newsletter that the kids want to do in order to increase understanding about the benefits of being bilingual. Very well done. Students who are not necessarily, as I understood it, very comfortable in front of anybody, including adults they don't know, and just did a terrific job. So I want to give a kudos out to that as well. All right.
Well, I have board of park planning.
Sure.
I attended the evening CPA meeting. There was a lot of people there.
Good.
And it was pretty much just a business meeting. They talked about they had done some fundraisers and actually raised more money than they expected with a new fundraiser this year. And so they were just talking about their budget and if there was other things they wanted to do this year for the school. They also talked about some activities they have planned for the year, different field trips that they have planned for the different grades. It was a good meeting. Went to the III conference on Saturday, attended a lot of good workshops, saw a lot of people, saw some people that I did my training with back in the summer. I guess,
remembered each other.
Yeah. Well, the one is my namesake, Steve Clark.
Oh.
So, but the one I wanted to mention, and I already spoke with Lori about this morning, but I attended the workshop on PARA that Bensonville actually did, and it was a really good workshop. I learned a lot, but I think it would be good for the board to kind of get an update on how we're handling that and what that's going to look like for us whenever is a good time for that. And then I was wondering on the agenda, I didn't see other matters on the agenda. Do we still have that?
It's here. You know what? It wasn't on.
It
wasn't. Yep.
Yeah, it wasn't on the confidential summary,
okay.
But it's on the regular agenda.
Other matter, not the board
okay.
Report, so
okay.
I'll hold off on that.
All right. Anybody else? We're good. All right. Thanks. Thank you. Great conference. Thanks for everybody who could go this year. All right. Other matters.
Okay. I guess I'll go first. I just wanted to bring up something. Kind of bothered me from the last meeting. I know when we were talking about TRS, we were talking about the director of finance position, and when we hired that person, if they didn't get paid TRS, they could be like the canary in the coal mine. And it was a reference that I had used at the board meeting prior when I was talking about our district's neediest children, and kind of struggling with the impact of the changes we're making in our elementary school. And it was interesting to me that we were worried, and we've had a lot of conversation about administrators who make over $100,000 and how this change could impact them. And should we have a test or a pilot? And these are administrators who have a choice if they work here or they don't work here. But on the contrary, when I used the analogy, I was referring to our students who don't have a choice if they go to school in D41. And, you know, unless their parents decide to send them to private school or homeschool them, you know, they don't have a choice of the environment that they go to every day, you know, and things that impact them, the multi-age classes, having multiple teachers, having an AP schedule. And, you know, I just think, I'm like, did we have a test group for these kids and things that would impact our children? And I guess why it bothered me, it just kind of bothered me, and I know as a board member, I'm supposed to support the direction of the district. This is our District 41 model. This is where we're going. But, and I brought this up a couple of times now, I just want to see some data that really shows that what we're doing in our districts is having a positive impact, be it academically, socially, emotionally. And I know we've heard the statement from Dr. Gordon that we're growing and data is improving, but when I look at the data, I don't see growth in all areas across the district in all grades. I don't see anything that conclusively supports that statement, and I just really, I want to see that data. I have a couple of quick slides. I've been told that I'm not allowed to put slides up unless I share them in advance. I don't know that I agree with that, but for now, I can't put up my slides, so I'll just have to summarize and I can hold them up.
Can you email those?
I can email them
to send them to Paul and he can send them.
Steph, I'm just going to interrupt you for 1 second because it's disturbing to me that we have, as a board, have not talked about that. And then Stephanie goes to hand Mike her slides, and we rely on Mike to tell her that she can't do it. But yet Mike was directed by somebody here not to do that. And what should have actually happened is whoever directed Mike not to accept that should have actually either had a conversation with us as a group and said we're making a decision or told him that. But first of all, the first problem I have is to put Mike in that position, tell a board member that they can't do it. That's just, to me, unacceptable. Secondly, if that decision's made, that decision should be shared with everybody. I mean, there's no king or ruler here. I mean, if the board consensus to that, that's fine. But somebody can't direct Mike to say that that can't happen. So I've got a real issue with what happened then.
So, Kurt, with that, are you talking about not putting up slides that we don't have already?
You wouldn't know about what transpired, but it happened tonight, and I'm pretty upset about it. And somebody directed Mike not to allow Stephanie to put slides up that she asked him to put up in other matters, which is an agenda item, which you can talk about whatever you'd like to talk about.
Okay.
And somebody was directed about it. I'm not upset with you, Dean. But
no, I wanted to give a little history so you that might tamper that a little bit. Probably 18 months or so ago, we, as a board, had that happen in a meeting where some slides were put up that none of us got to see ahead of time. And then we were in this position to have to start commenting on things. We didn't have any time to read and look at ahead of time. So back then we decided that if you want to do stuff like that, make sure that they get into the board reports so that we can look at them before the meeting so that when you put it up we can have an intelligent conversation. Or else what happens is you present data and none of us really have the chance
you
to look
bring
at
it back
it,
so. And say well, you would like it as a future
but
guide.
That's what we decided
and
as a board.
Well,
so
but
maybe
this,
we need to have that conversation.
Well, yeah, I was on the board 18 months ago, and I don't know this house.
I've shown slides before, and no one told me that.
Nope.
I mean,
no one contacted me.
I mean, obviously it's an issue, and out of respect for me, no one shared that with me, knew it was an issue. Obviously there's been thoughts that Stephanie might give Mike some slides, but nobody communicated that to me.
May I speak because I'm the person
like
being pointed out, and I'm
one
happy to speak to it.
I would like to say one other thing. It's other matters. We've discussed this numerous times that in other matters is not meant to be a board discussion. It's not. I don't plan on having a discussion. I would just like to share some information, express why I'm concerned and why I'd like more information, and we can come back later with that. And the reason that I'm bringing it up in other matters tonight is because I have asked numerous times for data to be on the board agenda. And actually, at the last meeting, I know we agreed. I remember Joe saying, I think that's a good idea. We should discuss data. I would like to think it should be discussed at a board meeting, a regular board meeting on the agenda when people, the public is here, they're listening, they know what's going on. Instead, I've been told it has to be discussed at our meeting where we're discussing our and I'm talking about data like right now, data we need to see today. I've been told we have to discuss it at our meeting where we're talking about our board goals for the future, for years out, which is a special meeting, which, you know, no offense, I don't really know that the public is going to pay any attention to or even know that that's, I just don't feel that that's the appropriate place to discuss it. I told Erica this over and over, and I said, you know what, I'll just take a couple of minutes, very few minutes, no longer than some of our board reports, to just explain what I'm looking for and say my piece. And that's how I feel about it. I don't think it's appropriate to put it in, to throw it in a special meeting. I feel like it needs to be discussed in a regular board meeting. And I don't plan for there to be discussion tonight, so that's why I didn't give anyone the slides in advance, because there isn't discussion. It's not on the agenda. It's other. I could talk about whatever I want during other.
And you did ask to have it on the agenda.
I did ask to have it on the agenda.
And if I can clarify, so the meeting on the 30th is about our long-range plan, et cetera, and I think it's in part about how are we, very much to what you're talking about, Stephanie, how are we going to be looking at it qualitatively and quantitatively, these priorities that we have. It's just a natural part of the conversation. To clarify, and then I'll go ahead and present, at the last board meeting, there was a request to put the survey information on, which we ended up putting on. But I remember in our conversation over the telephone asking, send to the board your ideas, because then we can have that in front of us. This is not about, let me be clear about this, this is not about stifling conversation. It is not about me trying to rule the board meeting. Let me finish. It is not about putting a staff member in the position of taking something from any board member. He gets direction from the superintendent, right? We know that. And then finally, you're right, data is important, but not knowing what it is that any board member wants to talk about and an agenda item puts the rest of the board at a disadvantage. That's all this is about. It's a perfectly important, valid, valuable topic. That's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is that the board has the right, as fellow board members, seven of us, to also understand why this is important and to have that information. If you went to the trouble of putting it together, then we can get it, similar to Patrick sending
you
his.
Put it on the agenda. I could have.
Yeah, you didn't put it on the agenda. That's the point.
Again, just to clarify, because had did not understand through several conversations what it is you wanted on the agenda.
You didn't ask me what I wanted, Eric.
Yeah,
you said it's more appropriate.
I did. I don't want to have this get into an argument. Please present your information.
Okay.
And we're happy to talk about getting this on the agenda. In fact, we have already scheduled for the beginning of the year our academic update.
Okay.
So we'll talk about how we can plug it in.
Can add to it. But
okay.
I would just like to defend myself a little bit with the survey on the agenda. I know you had asked me to put my thoughts together,
mm-hmm.
and it was almost like a stipulation, well, we'll put it on the agenda, but we need your thoughts. And I said, the only thing I want to talk about are what other topics as a board do we feel are important to be on the survey?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, isn't that sufficient? That's what I want to talk about. And I typed up my thoughts, my topics. I gave them to the board at the meeting. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
What, do I have to give the board in advance all of my thoughts? I knew.
No,
that
of course not.
I feel like I'm being told, well, you're not giving information
no,
in advance.
No, I did.
I said exactly. I want to talk about
well,
what topics do we want to
if that's how it came across, it was incorrect. What I'll say
but
is
you're bringing that
when
I didn't provide
and when board members have an agenda item, there's behind that is some thinking, which I think is valuable. I mean, if I didn't have Patrick's spreadsheet today, I could not have come here with an understanding of what he was trying to share with us. That's all. I want to close this so we're not arguing.
The TRS was on the agenda. Patrick provided it,
right.
So we were able to look at it. Now, you can. Had Stephanie provided that, somebody would have. Yeah, Levy.
This is
if Stephanie had provided it at 3 o'clock in the afternoon, I'm almost confident that somebody would have said, "Well, she provided it at 3 o'clock today, so therefore we can't talk about it." But
no,
in the end, that's not what I'm trying to do. It sure seems like it.
Well, it's not. Let me close this, and please go ahead and take and present this.
I know. I need to. I just think we need to be careful. I feel like
I feel
can
like
you just do the data. And let's
I just want to say this really
Joe,
quickly, Joe. I feel like it's important. As
it seems like a personal conversation
like,
between you.
It's
not
right. a personal. Joe, you're interrupting
you're
me. You're making this take longer than if I just spit out what I was going to say. I feel like as a board, if we were just, we need to be careful about what information as a board we have to make sure we share with everyone before the meeting. I mean, some of it is discussion that happens at the meeting, and I think I'm getting a little nervous about the amount of information that we're being asked to provide before meeting. So I'll leave it at that.
We'll talk about it, but it's simply about your ideas on agenda.
Okay.
Go ahead.
I apologize to everyone out there because you may not understand what I'm talking about. But
go ahead.
First thing. Mm-hmm. So the academic update in June. I still have some questions. I just brought one example because I could bring you many. I just brought one. But if you look at the box and whisker, you guys can maybe see this from far away. This shows we looked at the cohorts over time, cohorts, which is the same group of students year to year. And we put up these box and whiskers, and if you look at it, you can say, oh, look, we're growing. Our scores are going up, which they are, which I think, which naturally would happen with maturity and age and moving through the school year, you would see growth. So, yes, we can say when we look at a cohort, this is the kids that were in grade 5, they grew from fall of 2012 to spring of 2015, those kids grew. But are they meeting their growth targets? That, I think, is my big question. If you look at the data more detailed for that same cohort, grade 5, the percent of kids meeting projection dropped, or percent meeting projection dropped from 133 to 110 from fourth grade to fifth grade for those students. The percent meeting or exceeding their growth targets went from 67% to 56%. So even though as a cohort their scores trended upward, if I look, if you compare them from fourth grade to fifth grade, so this is why I get concerned when I hear, well, we're growing. Well, we've shown growth up, but are we really growing to the point that we should be growing to? Because when I talk to other districts, they say, you want to look at those growth targets. That's what we're paying. That's why we pay for with math. You want it, the growth targets are calculated with some formulas so you know what target those kids are trying to hit. And we're dropping in the percent meeting our growth targets. The next thing I asked for, and this data wasn't shared in the academic update, so hopefully it can be in the January one, is we showed the box and whiskers for a cohort, but what if we just looked at grade 5? The history of grade 5 in math for the past 4 years. If you look at this for the past 4 years in math, there's fall and spring. You can see fall starts lower, spring goes higher. But if you look across for fifth grade, really, the boxes have pretty much stayed at the same level for fifth grade for the past 4 years. So in my mind, some of the things that we're doing where we said we wanted to see growth, we wanted to be growing as a district, shouldn't we see grade 5 starting to creep up, or every grade start to creep up at a grade level? And I'm not seeing that.
Are those sorted by grade score?
Are they sorted by?
It's a RIT score, right?
Yes.
Where does it go relative to the national median?
It's kind of about the same. I mean, because the median is,
I think the little x is the national norm to exceed.
And I think we were told that that
we're
still
just
as
right
well.
Above the national norm. Like we haven't, we're not.
That's 75% of your 75% students are above the national norm.
Right. I'm not saying that's a bad thing, but
so you're just saying if you're looking at trend,
if we're looking
time,
at trend and trying to
see, just asking,
we were told
in a, I know what you said. I just want to make sure I understood.
Let's go ahead. I'm collecting some questions that
but
I'm hearing Stephanie
ask. To make statements like we're performing better than we ever have, we're growing. Is that really happening, or are we just performing the same that we've always performed? When I look at this, I feel like we're just performing the same.
So you're saying
performing.
We're
maybe that's, I'm not saying that
we're
better
maintaining
than the other.
Performance.
We're maintaining, right. To me, it looks like we're maintaining. I want to grade two. The last thing, I would really like to see us analyze the ICAT scores from 2014. This was in the Chicago Tribune back that spring. Some of you on the board will remember, I brought this to a board meeting and asked, when are we going to see some more information on the ICAT data? This compared us to local school districts. And I made my own little rudimentary chart, which I'll send out to everybody because this was hard to read. But I wanted to compare us to 89 and 200.
And what this chart compares is, compared the 2014 ISAT scores when the test was 100% Common Core to the 2013 ISAT scores when the test was only 20% Common Core. And if you look at District 89 and District 200, for percentage of students exceeding ISAT standards, only 2 of 21 schools in those districts saw a decrease. All of the other schools saw an increase, positive increase, since 2013 to 2014. In District 41, all of our elementary schools saw a decrease.
That was the first year of implementation of Think Tank.
Had we actually saw an increase, perhaps. Mm-hmm. But all of our elementary schools saw a decrease. So when I see this, and it was concerning to me when it came out in the paper, and we've done no evaluation of our ISAT scores. It was the last year of it. I know we don't have it this year, but it's the first year we implemented some very significant changes. And it's concerning to me when I see districts surrounding us taking the same test that was 100% Common Core, seeing a huge jump in their performance and the student time. And I feel like we should be evaluating that as a district. Can we reach out to some other districts that we compare ourselves to compare our math data with them, since Park is kind of crazy and all over the place? We have other districts that we have relationships with. Can we be doing that? And then also, our grading system. This year it's a different grading system from last year, but before that, maybe could we compare grades and compare how many students are meeting the standards versus just progressing? How have we been performing in that regard? And I don't know. It's changed a couple of times, so that may be hard to do using our grading system. But I just feel like we need to get a little bit more information that we're getting. And like I said, I want to support what we're doing as a district, but I'm not seeing the data that demonstrates anything other than, well, things seem to be going okay. And if things seem to just be going okay and we're not knocking stuff out of the park and making a huge difference, I'm going to ask the question a parent asked at the Ben Franklin Coffee. Have we just overcomplicated things to the point that it's putting too much on our teachers and too much on our students? And maybe we need to take a step back, because really what we're doing isn't making that big of an academic difference in that. And I'm specifically talking about the elementary schools, not the middle schools.
So if I can summarize the questions that you have with regard to data, which is what I had asked, was, are students meeting the growth targets? That was one. In terms of the academic update, looking at the math assessment, and the box and whiskers to understand that. And then the third area was trends over time in terms of the cohorts.
Trends over time
for grade level. But you had also asked about cohorts as well.
Well, cohorts we already received.
Right, you've gotten that.
We've received that right. Already.
All right. So we'll sit down and talk about this. As I said, we do have the academic update scheduled for the February 22nd meeting. That's going to get us further into MAP assessment, so there'll be two sets of that data, correct, fall to winter. And I'll talk with you about clarifying exactly what you're looking for so that we can have that information prepared. And for sure for February 22nd, that's already on the schedule. So thank you.
Well, and I would just very quickly tag off the stuff. And I had a teacher in this district who's well-respected say to me, is it better? Is what we're doing, is it better than what we were doing before? And I think that's to Stephanie's point. Is it better? We did a lot of things and changed it. And we can say we can adapt, but is it better? Is it better for our kids?
Well, we're going to be collecting, we're going to get a board report on the HumanX survey, and we'll be getting that data. And then starting January, 21st, it's rolling out the school perceptions?
Somewhere right around there.
Including the conversation that we had about making sure that some of those other data points are included. So we have our core analysis, but we also have some specific questions around this. To Kurt's point, so we'll be getting that data as well, which will continue to serve as a baseline for us. So, and then we'll have the community survey, and that'll be coming out after that. So lots of information we're going to be collecting.
I would also like to see some data about social emotional impact too, if there's a way to quantify that.
Well, we heard a lot of that tonight too in the Rising Star, where they're focusing on that. So that's, and that's why, actually, just to close this out on the 30th, I think it's so important for us as board members to think about what are the qualitative data points we need to be thinking about, and quantitative. And in fact, tonight I think bore out that there's a lot of toolkit around collecting information that we can be able to ask for as board members that we want to align to some of those strategic priorities. So I think that, that for me, it just reinforces a lot of stuff going on in the buildings that we can be drawing out on. All right. Any other matters? Items for consideration for future agenda. We have data and the specific questions. Anything else for people? You don't have to do it right now, but you can send those to Paul and to me as well. Okay, upcoming meetings. As we just talked about, November 30th, 2015, there's a special board workshop meeting here in the Central Services offices, the boardroom at 7:30, and it's our next follow-up meeting from November 2nd about board priorities, strategic priorities. I know that Nancy got a reminder out to everybody to send your beliefs, convictions on those seven strategic priorities. And I would encourage you also to... as I know some of us have already, but to go and look at some other districts and see what their strategic long-range plan looks like. And, in fact, I would suggest District 93, because they do have a really nice column of their data, what they are using for each of those areas. So take a peek at that. And then and just look around. Just see what else is out there, and it helps, I think, will help to inform our conversation. So that's November 30th. And then our last board meeting for 2015, which is December 14th, there'll be a public hearing at 7:15 on the levy, and then our regular Board of Education meeting right after that. All right, we have no need to go into closed session this evening. May I have a motion to adjourn the regular meeting?
Motion.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? I doubt it. Thank you. Thank you.